Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
We're going to teabag fight.
You heard of Junkyard Wars?
Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Well, hello there, and welcome to The Session. My name's Justin Crosley. I'm your host for this episode. And maybe even the next one.
We don't know.
Yeah, it's totally random.
We may never find out. Next one really is a maybe. I'm trying to get back from Colorado because Charlie Bamforth is on next week's show.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's coming down to the studio, and I'd really like to be here.
Me too.
Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah.
But we're still working on that Hop Grenade 2 in Fort Collins, Colorado. I'm flying back there about every other week.
Yeah, right.
I leave tomorrow, and I'm right now I'm scheduled to come home Sunday so I can be here for the show Monday. I don't know if that's going to change. But that's exciting stuff. Keep tuned to the Brewing Network and the Hop Grenade Facebook page for that information.
Why do you have to be there so much? Are you like running wires and hanging lights?
Someone's got to fuck something up.
I've seen him use a saw.
Yeah. It's not that. Jamil.
No, I'm not doing any of that.
Stuff.
I do have to run some wires later. But, just someone's got to be there to answer questions on a daily basis. You know, we do have a great contractor and a site superintendent. And when I'm not there, I have a morning phone call every day about it. But you just get a lot more done when you're there. And I notice that things don't get done when I'm not.
It's not like you didn't have two other partners.
Yeah, well, we are trading off a bit, but I'm also, you know, I'm a bit of a control freak, so I'd rather be the one who's there to make sure it's all getting done right. You know, there were several things that if I was gone for a week or two while this place was being built, I'd come in and find that 10 things had been done wrong. And some of those 10 things couldn't be fixed, and I'm just trying not to run into that.
Yeah. Did you make sure the next studio is right next to a bathroom also?
Funny you should mention that. The studio there, which isn't a real studio anyway, is right next to the women's restroom.
Perfect.
But it's only a studio in name. It's more of a lounge to hang out in.
Oh, okay.
It is, however, the place we'll do our remote broadcasts and such from.
So that will happen.
Yeah, we'll do the occasional remote broadcast. There's too many good breweries in Colorado not to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And part of my goal, even for opening, is I'd like to get some collaboration beers going, you know. Yeah. So I want to fly some of you guys out there to do some of that. But not only for our opening, but But later on, too, it's a great way to get content for the show. Yeah. It would be a shame to have a place there in Colorado and not tap into all those great guests we could get by doing some shows right from there. But
we better get busy on those beers.
Yeah, I'm reaching out to them now, Tasty, and
certain breweries.
You know, ones that we're fans of, and
that you know you'll be putting on the tap.
Yeah, exactly.
But Avery.
You know, I haven't reached out to Avery. You want me to reach out to them for us?
Yeah, tell them I would.
Would that be your brew?
Sure.
All right, I'll write that down. Avery for Tasty.
Thanks.
Coors.
Yeah.
Sandlot. You want that one?
I like to brew big.
Yeah. Well,
the ballpark thing. Yeah.
JP actually put the Sandlot on his list of breweries. That could be cool.
Oh yeah, I just threw out a bunch of lists. I don't care. Yeah. I'd rather brew a true than Sandlot. I'll give Sandlot to Warren.
Yeah,
Doc. Whatever.
I got to reach out to Funkworks because I really like those guys over there, and they're local in Fort Collins too. So I'm hoping they might want to do something with us. And then, of course, you know, New Belgium is in Fort Collins, and we're friends with their sour beer program manager Lauren. And that one, you know, maybe we can just get a blend.
Good blend,
right? Like we can go over there and do our own blend. And
because to me, that's much more exciting than actually brewing a base beer and inoculating with the things like. Here's 10 barrels you guys can choose from. Put a blend together. That's what I would much rather do.
Well, I agree, and we can go get just some content out of that.
Yeah.
And then it's also a one-off beer that will only be sold at the Hop Grenade there in Fort Collins. So,
and out of the back of the RV.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Drank out of the back of the RV.
Yes.
So we're working on some things like that. But even after we open, you know, I think we should keep the collaborations going out there and do some shows.
Cool.
So, yeah. We'll work on all that. We're looking at opening in July right now. So mark your calendars for the whole month of July.
and the first part of August.
Yeah, I have some conflicts already, but okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you, this contractor, though, they are ahead of schedule and have been since day one. I've never even heard those words in the brewery or bar construction business, and these guys are good, so I don't want to jinx us, but as of now we're ahead of schedule, which means we would be on time to open in July, even with a couple delays between now and then. So pretty exciting. It's going to be a cool place for those of you out in the Colorado area. Expect to come join us. All right, tonight we've got Urban Chestnut Brewing Company on the program. They're out of St. Louis, Missouri, Tasty.
Yeah.
Your old home state.
I was at their outlet in last September.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've had their beer several times, and I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
everything I had there was good.
You showed up for the right show, Doc, because they're all great German-style beers.
Yeah,
I was reading the reviews that Bevo sent out.
Okay. Good.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, the brewer is an actual German who went to school and brewed in Germany.
Or Bavarian.
Yeah.
The Germans make a distinction, by the way.
You're right. That's a good point. He's a Bavarian. Tasty, are you losing a bunch of weight or what?
A little.
You don't have worms or anything, do you?
Oh, no.
He's growing a beard.
I'm eating less.
You're eating less.
Yeah, yeah.
You're looking pretty good.
Half as much.
Okay. So, great.
I'm drinking it.
You're drinking half as much?
It's still the same.
Now, I just moved. I definitely am above Tasty on the death pool now. If he's losing weight and I'm just gaining everything. I'm gaining weight and disease.
He's losing it, and you're finding it, and that's beautiful.
Yeah. He lost it.
Don't let it go to waste.
How was your trip, Tasty?
Amazing would be an understatement.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was just crazy.
You went
to... Who needs a bucket list when this shit just happens?
Right?
Amazing.
London, Ireland?
London for 6 days, Ireland for five.
Okay.
Did a collaboration in each country.
Great.
It was fun. And then a bunch of, everybody like meets me at the airport, takes me to my room.
It's nice.
Treated like a king.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was good.
They bring you prostitutes?
No.
Okay.
That's who I didn't ask from the airport.
You didn't ask if they were prostitutes.
Yeah.
The destination was the National Brewers Conference of Ireland, which they call BrewCon.
Okay.
And Palmer, myself, and our beer friend, I can't think of it, Brandon Jones.
Okay.
We're all the speakers, and then they had a couple of ones.
Great.
It was fun. Yeah, that went really well, and. They were most receptive at the conference. Really took care of us.
Great.
Yeah. I did a collaboration beer with Four Pure. Remember our buddies from Four Pure that were in here in the studio?
Yeah.
Yeah, did one with them.
They're in England, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Are we going to get any of that beer, you think?
They said so.
Okay.
We'll see.
Send out some bottles.
Cans.
Cans.
Oh, yeah. No. Crawlers, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool. It'd be cool to try on the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had fun. Glad you made it back safely.
Safe.
All right. So a little bit later, we'll be talking to Florian from Urban Chestnut. We got a lot of great lager beers to try and talk about, and a Berliner Weiss. So that'll be some fun stuff. Let me get through a few announcements here. A couple of dates you need to know about. Our friends over at the 21st Amendment are having their Watermelon Kickoff on May 19th in San Francisco. It's their kickoff to summer. May 19th at the 21st Amendment San Francisco location. The tradition continues. Mark your calendars for the annual kickoff to summer. Will there once again signify the changing of the seasons with the signature watermelon drop from the rooftop?
Kaboom.
Also watermelon bowling, live music, barbecue, and more. All at the 21A in San Francisco. That's on May 19th, so you don't want to miss that. That'll be a good time. And then Drake's Session Fest is coming up on May 20th. I've never been to that one, but boy, have I heard good things about it. It's in Jack London Square now, right, Tasty?
Yeah, it's always been there. It's I've been to every one. They're great.
Okay.
Light beer, you think you don't get as buzzed, or do you? You just piss a lot more. You get drink just as much.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the fifth annual Session Fest. It's Drake's Brewing Company and Bike East Bay. And it's Saturday, May 20th, the day after the watermelon event at the 21A. From 1 to 5, you can go get tickets on eventbrite.com. If you just search Drake's Session Fest, you'll find it right away. Or you can go to drinkdrakes.com. Tickets are available now, so you're going to want to go check that out.
Yeah, if you get there, try my made a beer with Drake's today.
You did?
And a English Mile. It's going to be about 3.4%.
Nice.
And it should be done in time for that event. I just look at the thing like, wait a minute, it's only less than 2 weeks away.
But a mild goes quick.
Yeah, it'll ferment really quick.
Okay. And they made it specifically for that?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you brought us a beer from Drake's, too.
Yeah. They gave me some bottles of this beer they call a Pilsner.
I've heard of it. It
has no label on it. I guess it's a secret here.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like a really nice Pilsner, nice and clean.
It is a nice Pilsner.
Did a good job.
I wonder if that's all German hops in there. I'm thinking not.
I don't know.
I would agree. I don't think it is, but
I like the twist.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
That's a really good Pilsner. Everyone seems to be making Pilsners now, huh? Or lagers,
catching
anyway.
On. Yeah, well, yeah. Sometimes they're not lagered very long, so they call them Pilsner.
I see.
They're great. They're good summer beers, and you can, get them up to 5.5-6%, even higher.
No.
And hop.
Don't do that.
It's a mistake.
Don't fucking do that.
You could.
It's a mistake.
But you'd be an asshole if you did that.
Serve it with a bottle of seltzer water.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And you can make your own.
Dilute it.
Yeah. But they're really good. 4.5-5% great beers.
Okay. Well, I like this one. I can't wait for that to come out. They finally, we were talking about the Hop Weiss beer. They sent me a couple bottles of that, too. So Drake's doing good things over there.
I look forward to drinking that.
As you should. They've been sitting on my desk for 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
I stole them.
Oh, nice and warm.
Your refrigerated desk.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's fine.
I stole them.
It's fine.
They're fine. Fucking beer snobs.
If it's not in the right glass, I'll rather eat my own shit.
Yeah. Also, if you haven't heard yet or registered for HomebrewCon, do yourself a favor and head over to homebrewcon.org and click the register button. You'll be so glad you did. HomebrewCon is where the awesome community of brewers gathers for 3 days of learning, camaraderie, and great beer. It's an experience unlike any other. Of course, the Brewing Network, as we always have, will be there.
Strong, yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll be there in force. We got Tasty going, Doc going, sounds like Beardy's potentially going.
Well, yeah, now it's happening.
You're
in Minnesota.
Yes. Okay. Yes, right, yeah.
All right.
I'm also bringing the wife.
Yo, you are?
Yes.
All right.
She won't be at NHC, most likely.
She's doing other Minnesota things?
Right,
because her family's there?
Jumping in lakes and getting ticks and all those things that they do.
Yeah.
Buying a house,
what did
so you
do
have
today?
To move there.
Got ticks.
Where's an oak?
Oh, yeah. Don't let her do that.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, take the credit cards away and break her hands so she can't sign anything.
What kind of credit limit do you think I have that she can charge a house?
I don't know.
In Minnesota, probably.
I guess, that might happen.
Yeah. By three.
Yeah.
So we'll all be there. Go to homebrewcon.org and get registered today. Trust me, you'll have a good time. And then right here at the Hop Grenade in Concord, California, our craft series returns with Magnolia Brewing Company, and that is this Saturday, the 13th, I love Magnolia beers. I always have. And it used to be you couldn't really get them on tap out here in the East Bay. But
yeah, now they have enough. They've got a bigger brewery.
Yeah, now that they've grown up a little bit. So come out to the Hop Grenade here in Concord this Saturday for Magnolia Brewing Company Craft Series. If you want to support the BN, you can do it by shopping on Amazon. Just click the Amazon link. It's an orange button on our homepage. And then shop as usual, and you won't even know that we're there. You could also subscribe and join the BN Army, and for as little as $2 a month, it enters you to win $100 to More Beer, the sponsor of this session and every session that we do. The More Beer monthly donation giveaway, it's a chance to win $100, which, you know, it kind of goes a long way over at More Beer. They got they got good prices. So,
absolutely.
Subscribe and join the Army. The more you donate, the more you're entered to win. You could also do one-time donations over there if you're just feeling like, hey, I got $20 and I want to throw it your way.
Yeah, I got a bonus.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it back to the people.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get a bonus.
Oh, I know. I give all your bonuses to the Brewing Network, too.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay. Hey, wait a minute.
It's like a deduction.
I go hit that donate button. I was like, you know where JP wants this to go?
Yeah. I'd rather give PayPal a percentage than give JP a goddamn dime.
Thanks, JP.
Hey, man.
It's like you know me.
Yeah.
So lots of ways to support the BN. And you can also buy merchandise, by the way. You know, we got hats and shirts and growls. And there's probably stickers over there, and
probably.
I think scarves.
Can't be sure.
Socks. We have socks now.
Oh,
whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Who
actually
knew?
Don't think we have scarves anymore, but we do have socks.
Scarves are gone. Okay. Well, it's summertime anyway. So.
Yeah.
But socks. Yeah. You wear those year round.
Unless you do. Yeah.
Most people
wear them around without shoes. Wear them with shoes. Wear them with sandals.
Yeah.
That happens.
Socks are always in fashion. Scarves, not so much.
That's true. And I saw some new hats in my inbox today. I think I got to approve some design changes I asked for, and then we'll have some other hats in there, too. And, of course, we'll be selling merchandise at HomebrewCon, so you can buy from us there also.
Awesome.
Get updates about things and other things on Twitter, Facebook, and photos on Instagram. I think that's what you do with Instagram, right? Just photos?
Sure. All there is, it's really soliciting DMs.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really just nudes in the DMs, and that's that's where it goes down.
Got it.
In the DMs.
Direct messages?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. I didn't know if that was like, I know what DPs are.
Yes, you do.
And I know what DP is.
Yes. Direct prostitution. It's a whole different show.
Yeah. That's when I go to England, Tasty. Direct prostitution. Yeah. They don't pick me up at the airport. They just send hookers.
That's right.
Don't ask.
And I won't tell.
That's why the Raiders are moving to Vegas.
Oh,
yeah.
What a great place to play football or,
yeah.
Or do anything.
110-degree heat. You know what I'm going to do? Run into you.
How many players are going to lose to the legal system after this?
Good question. More than they already do?
Right, yeah, most. Yeah.
Just the DUIs alone.
Yeah. It'll probably be the first team in history to outpace their fan base in losing to the legal system.
It's first time in history.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be here all night.
You can send feedback to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com, and you can send your show ideas over there, too, or you can send them to bevo@thebrewingnetwork.com. JP reads through the feedback, so you're sure to get them there.
It's true.
You might not make it past him, but...
That's also true.
All right, do we have a Twitter game today?
We do.
Great. Twitter game's brought to you today by our friends at White Labs. And, you know, White Labs has been releasing all the yeast from the vault, and there's still time. You know the vault, of course.
Well, of course.
All of those strains that they had that they before you had to kind of pre-order and wait.
Yeah, because they're just non-production
exactly.
strains. Yeah, they're kind of weird and funky and, you know.
Exactly. Great. And by the way, it's kind of expensive to produce a full batch of yeast.
Yeah.
And so rather than produce yeast that, you know, folks didn't want, they came up with the vault program. But after a bit of time, they decided, you know what, we really want this yeast out to the public. So they've been releasing all the yeast, and there's still time left for you to choose from a great lineup and place an order on unique specialty strains like WLP 845, which is fast lager yeast. There you go, Tasty. It's quick to ferment lagers, or WLP 564. They had to send me this one. Leeuwenhoek Leeuwenhoek.
Of course.
I'll just try it a couple ways.
Yeah.
Just go by the number, 564.
Right.
That's a Saison yeast blend, perfect for your summertime sessions. So visit whitelabs.com/thevault and purchase a yeast strain before its order cutoff date. Once all the yeast has been released, White Labs will be adding the same strains back into the vault and continuously add new ones as well. So this could be your chance to get these rare specialty yeast strains without waiting for it to collect 250 pre-orders. So don't wait. whitelabs.com/thevault. What's our Twitter game?
Well, as you may or may not have heard, everybody, there was a slew of beer buyouts this week.
Oh,
I
saw it on Instagram.
We're gonna talk about it in the news. Don't worry about it. But I do want to give everybody a scoop here that it is true. The rumors are true. AB InBev has reached out to the BN to buy.
Not surprising.
Doc.
Yes. I read that.
Just Doc.
Yeah.
Not surprised. No.
None of us.
He's the biggest asset here.
So they want the chemical rights to my blood.
Well, you're half right, Tasty. Okay. He's the biggest asset. Sorry. So I want you guys on Twitter to name Doc's new high-end brand podcast, because the high-end is their craft. Okay, maybe
it's too meta.
So what's Doc's new podcast, and what will he talk about for Anheuser-Busch, InBev, Golden Road, whoever
Goose,
else.
10 barrels.
Yeah.
Goose Road.
Goose 10 barrel Lagunitas.
10 goose barrels.
Wicked ones.
Wicked weed. There you go.
Yeah.
10 wicked goose barrels.
And Shock Top. Don't forget, Wicked Weed is now in the same category as Shock Top, literally being ran under the high end. So
do you think they're going to get a little Volkswagen Beetle with a Mohawk on it, too, to drive
fucking
around?
I hope so.
I would love that.
So there you go. That's the Twitter game.
Okay. Love it.
Nice job.
Okay. You guys want to do some feedback?
Yes. There's not a lot, I think.
Yeah, a couple things in there, it looks like. Feedback's brought to you today by our friend John over at the Beer Law Center. You can go to beerlawcenter.com and check him out. John's done a lot of great work for us protecting our logo over the years, our trademark. And by the way, he's coming out with a book.
He's coming out with a book. I just submitted my forward to it.
I submitted I didn't get a thing in the book. I'm on the back cover, like a recommendation.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm happy about it. Nice. I'm pretty proud of it.
Me too.
And so John's a great guy. You don't have to take our word for it. Just go check him out. Go to beerlawcenter.com, and I guarantee you he can help you do all of your legally things, legally even, at your brewery.
Yeah.
All right.
No, that book is awesome. I've read it. It's really, really good.
Good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's really certainly filling a need. You know, not every brewer can afford a full-time lawyer, although John's fees are very reasonable.
That's true.
But just to kind of cover all of those other bases where you don't want to hire a lawyer, I think that's really why he's doing the book. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah. On a scale of Coors Light to, I don't know, what's a really expensive beer? Cantillon.
Okay.
Where are his fees in the craft beer spectrum? And I know Coors Light isn't craft beer. Just forgive the mixed metaphors here.
I don't know.
Okay.
Because,
like a Sam Adams?
We work in trade.
Okay.
But
just a guess.
Business relationship.
I would put him somewhere in the Shock Top.
Okay.
To...
Remember, not quality.
To
Hainanitas.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
All right.
And you're getting a guy who makes choices like having JP in the front and Justin in the back.
Hey, if that's not the best goddamn Eiffel Tower we've ever been a part of, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
okay?
He has good taste.
Yeah.
Well, you should see his cover photo. It's actually JP and I Eiffel Towering John the lawyer.
Right.
Good move.
While wearing bow ties.
We'll have John call in when the book's available. We can talk about it then.
That'd be great, man.
So, all right. So a different Jay somewhere east of the Mississippi writes in, "Hello. First and foremost,
hi.
I want to say hi to the Brewcasters, and maybe even Justin if he's there.
Hello.
I also want to congratulate JP on advancing to the NHC second round.
That's right. Thank you very much.
That's
appreciate
a great
it.
Move there.
You got your scores.
I did get my scores. That's a whole show we could do.
without going too far into detail, you made it to the second round?
I made it to the second round with my oatmeal stout. Okay. Apparently a 38 is now second round material these days.
That's a great score.
Well, that's interesting.
I've lost with a 41 or 42 before.
Yeah, but I've ran a competition, and it's rare to have a above anything in the 40s place first.
It was just crazy to me. Yeah, but, yeah, so it's cool. I'm excited about it. I've already rebrewed it. I was going to say,
you better rebrew that thing if it's a 38.
Yeah, I tweaked it just a smidge. I thought it was a little too high in the crystal malt and the flavor when I was tasting it when they were judging it at the same time, because I save a bottle and then during the judging weekend I'll drink it at the same time. It's conditioning right now, and I'll keg it up here probably this weekend and get it out second day air. It needs to be there June 1st.
Okay.
So I'm excited about it.
Did you use their comments to help you tweak it for the next?
I would have had there been comments.
Oh. So they just put numbers and that was that?
It's the check forms. Actually, I'm being facetious. The stout did have some comments. It was very good. The stout judges. On the smoke beer, I'm lucky if I got half my boxes checked in.
Wow.
Yes,
okay.
Or no.
Yeah. So it was, needless to say, I fired off a very very sternly worded long email to the comp organizer. I started off with, Mike, I know you're going to get static for this competition, but I'm here to add more.
Okay.
I am not happy with blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, anyway. It's the same shit, though. It's NHC. They don't have enough judges. They need to get shit out.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a problem that I don't know if there's a solution other than paying people to be beer judges, which is never going to happen.
Sure.
So.
Are you going to use
Doc,
the same
you get paid
technique?
To judge beer, don't you?
According to my wife's lawyer, I do.
Maybe.
And, a pretty penny, too.
Yeah. Doc, did you enter? I thought I remember.
Yeah, I did.
And?
Nothing.
No.
I haven't even read the score sheets.
You couldn't bring yourself to do it.
I'll read them for you.
even if I make it through, I still get angry at the score sheets.
Yeah, okay.
What is that? Because I'm the same way.
It's the stupid comments.
Yeah.
Like, watch your fermentation temperature, or maybe you should try automated fermentation. And I'm like, oh, you mean that cool conical that I have that does everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
It is hard because sometimes judges forget, or maybe they weren't trained very well, that you're supposed to make comments on what you taste, and you're not supposed to offer suggestions.
Okay.
It's just, how does this compare to the style, and why did I give it the score that I gave it?
Sure.
That's why. You're not supposed to do stuff like, hey, watch, maybe next time add this or take away some of this.
Right.
You're not supposed to do that because, like Doc just said, they don't know what you've done. They don't have the recipe. They don't have all their stuff in front of you. So you're not supposed to do it. And if you do that, that's the mark of a terrible judge.
And
you can say things like, well, this thin flavor might be because you might, sometimes associate with mashing too low. You could say that, but you can't say,
maybe
you should have done this, you should have done that.
Because ultimately you don't know.
Yeah.
So I was taught just to steer away from that entirely and just say it has, the mouth feels a little too thin for style. Because you're only giving feedback. You're not there to teach them how to brew.
Right. All right. Just another palate.
Yeah.
I didn't even look at my numbers. What the hell?
Okay.
I'll look at them eventually.
JP, correct me if I'm wrong, but your oatmeal stout always makes it through when you enter.
Most times, yeah, it does, actually.
And then
nothing.
Then it crashes and burns.
Yeah, and then it falls apart, man.
Okay, yeah.
But I'll be,
because they get good judges.
That's true. Then they get people who know what's going on. And I think in that region, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think people are maybe more keyed into darker beers in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe than they would in, like, out in California, where we're, like, inundated with IPA syndrome.
Well, but the NHC moves around, so that would vary year to year.
But you're saying this year he might have a chance.
Sure, fuck with me, Warren.
Yes.
Sure.
You have a great chance.
Yeah, that's all I wanted.
That was
you're
the most
likely.
Pathetic yes I've ever heard.
Yes.
So we'll see. I don't know, man.
Well, I'm rooting for you.
Me too. Wouldn't that be amazing if I could actually...
That would be great.
The hard part would be... How would I walk up on stage with a raging boner I would have?
Proudly.
Just do it. Yeah, exactly. Just own it.
Just keep your napkin after it for dinner. Yeah.
Don't trip and fall. It'll hurt.
Poke Gary in the leg. Hey, sorry.
I'm fairly certain nobody would notice.
Wow.
All right. Well, Jay goes on to say, I've advanced to the second round as well, and the vast majority of what I learned has come from listening to the shows produced by the BN. In an action purely motivated by avoiding any feeling of guilt from gaining so much knowledge for free, I've signed up as a private in the BN Army. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, I'm also going to be that guy and throw in my 2 cents on New England IPA. The topic of every show.
Can I just point it out that we don't bring it up most of the time? It's right. from feedback or listener comments. So.
Yeah. All right. I just wonder how many shows we have done that has not mentioned a New England IPA in the last 365 days.
I'm sure someone in Vermont TM
has
can tell you that.
Yeah. All right. He says, I've tried some commercial examples and brewed a few myself. It can be a pretty good beer. But as for me and mine, we'll stick with the Left Coast way of doing things.
Me and mine.
Thanks for what you do, Jay, somewhere east of the Mississippi. Okay.
Thank you very much, Jay.
Oh, here's one, a little feedback about the Neshaminy Creek show. Tim C. writes in, hey, BN crew, I recently got back into brewing and the Brewing Network after being away for some time, and I just listened to the show with Neshaminy Creek. Jeremy Myers was a great interview. The guy is so energetic and passionate about what he does. It was a lot of fun to listen to. I agree.
Yeah, that was great.
I thought he was a very cool person to hang out with, and the beers were all really, really good.
Top notch.
Yeah. He says, I started listening to you guys back in 06, and so 11 years later, you're still producing a great program. Keep up the good work from Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Tim. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
JP is still producing a great program.
Yeah.
All right. And then I had one other thing to do here, but I didn't. It's here somewhere. Hang on.
I screw something up? Did I forget something?
No, I did it.
Beat me, Daddy.
Yeah. You were doing a great job producing the show.
You did screw up something.
What'd I do? Did you send me something to include in feedback?
We'll talk about I guess I just got to read it when we come back. We'll figure it out at the break.
Oh, man.
It just looks like I'm missing some copy.
You're on timeout.
No, that's gay.
One of us did it. I don't know. Doesn't matter. We will get it taken care of. All right. So how about this? We'll take a quick break right now, fill our own glasses with beer. You should do the same unless you're driving. unless you're in the great state of Missouri and then fill it up anyway. I don't care.
Right, dude.
That's allowed there, right, Tasty?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Makes sense.
I have a speeding ticket in Missouri from like 20 years ago.
Wow.
I was driving through and I was like, I'm never paying this fucking thing. You give me any ticket you want.
Yeah.
Never paid it. So
an outstanding warrant.
Yeah, you have a bench warrant for your arrest in Missouri. Huh?
Yeah, so this will be the one guest who I won't be like, hey, love to come visit you. Can't do that. This is not going to happen.
I hope NHC's in Missouri in 2 years.
Oh, man. I'll be like, well, guys, I'm skipping this one. Can he end up in jail for an old speeding ticket? It must have, like, fallen through the system by now.
I thought they linked all of the DMV, like, databases.
I
thought it should have, I feel like it should have shown up.
I doubt that they would do that.
It was, like, just before, this was a long time ago.
I think that they'll just pull you into the station and make you pay it. I don't think they'll throw you in jail. I think they'll hold you until you pay.
If I get pulled over again.
Sure.
They'll pull out that rubber glove.
In the South, I think they just hang you right there.
I'm on, like, Missouri's most wanted list now.
What?
Missouri's not in the South, is it?
Depends who you ask.
Yeah, it depends.
I'm real dumb.
Mid-South?
I got the
Midwest.
I don't know.
Don't worry. The rusty end of the Bible Belt.
You're not that dumb. My wife asked me the other day if people eat sheep. So, that's pretty dumb.
She's never heard of MLT.
Do they?
Okay. This is why Bev and her are friends.
Right.
Bev just goes, do they?
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Florian. Of course, he is from Urban Chestnut Brewing Company. And we're going to learn about lagering beers and great German beers. And he's got a pretty extensive resume. So you're going to learn a lot tonight. Hang in there. It's the session.
You're listening to The Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Are you a member of the White Labs Customer Club? If not, you should be. It's the easiest way to earn free stuff for turning in your old homebrew labels from either Vials or Pure Pitch. All you have to do is save your labels and redeem them for things like free yeast, an exclusive White Labs t-shirt or sweatshirt, and even the opportunity to brew with the yeast man himself, Chris White. Signing up is easy. Just go to whitelabs.com/customer club, fill out the registration form, and then mail in your labels. They will return the favor by sending you awesome White Labs swag. Go sign up today at whitelabs.com/customer club. White Labs, pure yeast and fermentation since 1995.
the 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of the buzz, the forum, the learning center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Marin Brewing Company in Northern California has been making award-winning beers for more than 25 freaking years. Today, I want to tell you about their new 12-ounce cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale. The good stuff, Mount Tam is bright gold, 5.5% ABV to keep you feeling good, and has been winning awards since 1989. If you're visiting the Bay Area, get your butt out to Marin Brewing Company. They pour tasty beers and serve great food every day until midnight. Come in for a tour, stay for the food, and pick up a six-pack of cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale to enjoy at home, camping, biking, or whatever the hell you do. Owner Brendan Moylan has this to say about Marin Brewing beers.
It's freaking awesome.
Marin Brewing has won more than 100 gold medals in international competitions. Check out marinbrewing.com for all their award-winning beers, food, and merch. Marin Brewing Company in Larkspur, California. Award-winning taste, refreshing finish. It's freaking awesome.
Hey, this is Gabriel from Half Acre in Chicago. You're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network. That's right. Welcome back to the show, and thanks for hanging out with us. Also, thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Great Fermentations. Go to greatfermentations.com, where you can find out about how they're giving away free homebrew ingredients for 15 years and a Blickman Brew Easy all-grain brewing system. Go to greatfermentations.com/giveaway and enter for your choice to win. It's a huge prize, a $10,000 retail value. Compliments of Great Fermentations. The grand prize announcement will be on Saturday, June 17th. Also, they're doing random giveaways every 2 weeks leading up to the close of the competition, which those items include conical fermenters, temperature controllers, and the new Blickman Riptide Brew Pump. and a bunch more. So get top-notch customer service and same-day shipping on so many items at Great Fermentations. Go to greatfermentations.com/giveaway. And like them on Facebook, too, GR8 Fermentation, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. All right. As I said, our guest today is Florian from Urban Chestnut Brewing Company in St. Louis, Missouri, and we should have Florian on the line now. Are you with us?
I am. How are you?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the show, Florian.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Hey, I was trying to remember. I think I interviewed you first years ago at the Great American Beer Festival, back when you were kind of in the R&D department for Anheuser-Busch. Does that sound right?
That sounds right. I think so, yeah.
It was a long time ago. And I remember being really excited to interview you, actually, for one, as a German brewer, as our listeners are going to learn today. But it was cool for me back then in my career to talk to somebody at a big brewery who was working in like an experimental department.
And, it was definitely a fun job. Lots of experimenting and lots of coming up with new recipes. So
very cool.
Well, and now you get to see them brewed at Wicked Weed, so that's cool.
Yeah. Well, today, of course, we're going to talk about Urban Chestnut Brewing Company. And how long ago did you start that, Florian?
I did leave AB in 2010, and then we made our first batch in early 2011. So it's been a few years.
Got it. And you worked at other breweries before then, back in Germany and in the U.S., right?
Yeah. So I grew up in a fairly small town, pretty close to Munich. And my first brewing job was at a local brewery. We made very traditional Bavarian beers, Helles, Pils, wheat beer. And then worked for a bunch of other places before getting to AB. Big stops, I guess, were meantime in London. I started that up as their first brewmaster, and also worked for Duvel in Belgium for a very short period of time, and New England Brewing Company in Connecticut.
Okay, my home state. Very nice. I'm curious about the career choice of being a brewer in Germany. Here, I guess it's changing now, where you know, maybe you can be in high school and say, I'm going to be a brewer when I grow up. You know, but that hasn't always been the case. In Germany, was that a very normal thing? Like, I guess I want to know when you decided to be a brewer, and if it's super normal in Germany for a kid to go, yeah, I'm going to be a brewer. That's what I want to do.
It is pretty normal. In Germany, it's pretty regulated. You basically have to do an apprenticeship before you can call yourself a brewer, and that typically takes anywhere from 2 to 3 years, depending on the schooling you have before that.
Okay.
You basically work in a brewery, you take classes several weeks a year, and then you have a big exam at the end, and basically after that, you can call yourself a brewer.
Got it. And when did you know you wanted to be a brewer? How old were you?
I probably was 17 or 18. I was always interested in biology and chemistry, and that's definitely a big part of the brewing education. And then worked for a local brewery just in the summer, basically making some extra money, mostly delivering beer to various accounts, and then kind of decided that I liked the company, I liked the job, and looked into it further and just started the apprenticeship there.
Okay. And then how did you end up making the jump from there over to the U.S.?
So after I was done with my apprenticeship, I just wanted to see something else and, just got the opportunity to work for a small brewery in Connecticut, New England Brewing Company, before I did my master's in brewing science at Weihenstephan. So I basically, got the opportunity, applied there, everything worked out, and I got a chance to work there for about a year.
Okay. But other than, I guess it sounds like going back for your master's, you've pretty much been in the U.S. ever since?
UK and the U.S.
UK,
yes.
Too, okay.
So after the master's, I lived in England for a couple of years and then got a job at EB, and then been in the U.S. since then.
Okay. Interesting. And then, so you had this great resume. AB was probably a pretty good gig. What made you decide to open your own brewery?
That kind of had been a dream of mine since I started getting into the business, and things were just right. I've actually worked with my business partner, David Wolf. He was at EB and working in sales and marketing. And we met up, we worked on some projects at EB, and I don't exactly remember how we started talking about potentially opening our own brewery, but we basically just started putting some numbers together, working on a business plan, and yeah, I guess decided in middle of 2010 to just give it a go after convincing our wives. I guess that was the hardest part.
yeah. American wife?
Yes.
Oh, so it's even harder. Yeah. God bless you.
I'm not sure, but it took a while. I mean, we certainly had to make the case that hopefully this was going to be successful. And
just mortgaging everything.
We knew what we were doing.
Right.
Yeah, I imagine with your resume, it wasn't hard to get funding.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we basically put together our retirement funds and had some friends and family invest, and fortunately we're able to convince them that was a good idea. So
sure,
worked out well.
Well, and kind of speaking of being successful and even the risk involved, in 2010, even more than now, you know, IPAs were really king, right? And ales in general. And here you come along and say, well, I'm going to open a lager brewery. And I don't know, it just seemed, maybe risky isn't the right word. Certainly different at the time.
Yeah, I guess my main thing is that I enjoy to drink sessionable beers, and growing up with Helles and Pilsner and wheat beer, those were definitely styles that we wanted to make. We do make IPAs as well, but it seems like that the Twickle of one of our lagers is definitely the biggest seller, and people seem to really go for the session beers. So we're more than happy to provide those.
That's great that even though you provide an IPA, it's not your best seller. I like that.
I appreciate that greatly.
Yeah.
Your consumers are very smart.
Right.
And handsome.
Yes. I will let them know. Thank you.
Every time they order something other than IPA, tell them, the Brewing Network says you're smart and handsome.
Yeah. Maybe we'll make some buttons for you to hand out. Do you think that your region had something to do with that, wanting lagers and lighter beers there, or was it just that you came out with great beer?
I mean, certainly St. Louis is a lager town, and has a Busch being here, and there's a lot of history of other German breweries and lager brewing, but I think there's probably market for session beers / lager beers all over the place. I think if you offer something that's a little bit more complex than other offerings and make a quality beer, that you can be successful with that pretty much anywhere.
Okay, that's a good point. Well, we're drinking your Zwickel lager right now. Am I saying that right if I was kind of a German?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
But everyone else says Zwickel, right? Like, that's how your customers order it? Or have they gotten it right by
now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how did you say it?
We have some beer names that are very hard to pronounce. That's one of them, I guess. But.
You do. There's one we're going to taste later that I'm going to leave it to you before I even attempt
right.
it. But yeah, Beardy, to answer your question, W is the sound of a V.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
that was the difference.
So Zwickel.
Right,
and
with Z in the front is the Z, and the Z in the end is a T.
Oh, okay. All right. I did not know. What does Zwickel mean?
So Zwickel is basically the sampling valve on a fermentation or maturation tank. So basically, a Zwickel beer is beer that's unfiltered, that's unpasteurized, the way it would come out of a maturation tank. So it's as natural as you can imagine.
Got it. So this is then, I hope I'm describing this right, this would be considered an unfiltered Bavarian lager. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
for unfiltered.
Right, it's pretty clear.
This
right?
is a clear
yeah.
this is a clear beer, dude.
Yeah.
It's not like lager clear.
It's not brilliant, but
that's
very
clear.
It's about as brilliant as you are.
Yes.
Yeah, we actually don't filter any of our beers, but we by just settling the yeast out, it does get pretty clear. So it has a slight haze depending on the batch that we make, but it gets pretty clear after a while. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really enjoy this beer. This is one of the beers I've had of yours before. I'm glad you sent it to us to taste today. It's a great Bavarian lager.
It really is.
Really good body in it too. It's really satisfying.
I'm really enjoying it. It's not just I'm just drinking a beer. And, hey, that's pretty good. No, this is actually really good.
It's got, I mean, it's a true German-style beer, in my humble opinion. It's got just that little bit of sweetness. I don't know what malt that might be coming from. Maybe you. What does the malt bill on this look like, Florian?
So it's mostly Pilsner malt, and we actually import that ourselves from a couple of smaller malt houses in Bavaria. And,
oh, wow.
Then we add a little bit of caramel malt, about 1%. Oh. But so mostly it's Pilsner, barley, light barley malt. Pilsner
interesting.
Malt.
And why, I'm sure there's some trouble involved, why go through the trouble of importing your own Pilsner like that? Did you really find it to be different than what was available here?
Yeah, it's like when you think of wine and grape varieties, if you grow grape variety in California versus somewhere on the East Coast, even if you have the same plant or the same variety, it'll taste different. And the same is true for barley that you can find all over the world. And I do find that the barley grown in Bavaria is just, I don't know, it's hard to describe. I guess maybe a little bit more complex and has that those bready notes that some of the barleys grown in the U.S. don't quite exhibit. So that's why we decided that that's the correct way of doing things and are importing those malts from Bavaria.
Okay.
Yeah, in the U.S., people tend to add a lot of like specialty malts to bring up that bready quality. With this malt, it doesn't seem like you have to.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that American malts are bad. It's just different.
Right?
It's
just different.
different beers, and we use quite a bit of American malt as well. But for that type of beer, it just I find that the Pilsner malt from Europe is a little bit nicer.
And I would think that would be a significant cost increase to you for base malts.
Yeah, it's certainly from a logistical standpoint, it's definitely a little bit more complicated because you have containers full of malt sitting on boats for several weeks and making sure that we always have malts in the brewery to be used for brewing and shipping isn't totally cheap either. So it's definitely an extra effort that we go through.
Okay. And something else I want to note about this beer that I don't think we say on the show very often is I think it's carbonated absolutely perfectly for this style of beer. It's obviously, it goes down smooth enough. There's not too much carbonic acid getting in the way. And I wonder if you do the traditional German way of carbonating, too, where you instead of forced carbonation, you recoup the CO2.
Yeah, we do. We close the fermenter. Kind of towards the end of fermentation to make sure that there's enough sugar left to be converted into CO2 that gets dissolved into the beer. And I do think that makes a difference. Again, from an analytical standpoint, you probably can't detect that or say that there's a difference, but I do think it's kind of mellower, as you had said.
It is. And there's a texture involved in it. Yeah, you know how people talk about like the tiny bubbles
versus...
I call it
the size of the bubbles are smaller. Naturally... Yeah.
It just really I just thought it was worth noting because it really works well for this beer.
I think we've talked to some people who do that and they think there's some sort of ester carryover.
Well, that's what I kind of wonder is that you're locking in some of the extra sulfur compounds and everything in the beer that would maybe naturally gas off if you let it entirely finish and then added just straight carbonation, just straight CO2.
Yeah, so there is a different flavor from it. I don't know if Florian can.
Well, what do you think about that, Florian?
It's definitely possible that by kind of binding it more to certain compounds that are around that you create a different bond and hence a different flavor impression when you drink it. I don't have any scientific proof, but it's definitely possible that it happens.
That's 100% yes.
Right.
That's what that was.
Yeah. Agreed.
Don't worry. I speak brewer. Don't worry.
Well, I wonder about just like the increased pressure on the yeast. They're going to act differently than they would in a still beer finishing the beer.
Yeah. There's less CO2 scrubbing happening. Less CO2 is leaving the beer and carrying volatiles with it.
Yeah.
At the end of fermentation,
sure,
so you'd have some left behind.
Definitely towards the end of fermentation. So there's a little bit more that we trap in the tank for sure. Yeah. In terms of the pressure, by the time the pressure is all the way there.
It would affect
mostly yeast activities is already done, but still has an impact on the yeast.
With doing the spunding, are you how many times, if more than one, for repitching, are you dumping the yeast?
It really depends on the strain that we're using. For the lagers, we're pretty traditional, up to about 10 times. We use some beers, we only use the yeast once because we find that there's just the flavor that we're looking for isn't there after you repitch it. Mm-hmm. But for the lager yeast, we keep on using that a few times.
And you'll dump 10 times over the maturation?
Dump
the yeast 10 times over the lagering period and everything?
We typically pull it off after primary fermentation is complete and then just before we move the beer on to bright beer.
Okay.
And I assume it's also all German hops that you've used here?
Yes.
You're not going to dick around with that.
Straight Willamette. That's all I do. I will import Pilsner malt from Germany, but Willamette is my go-to.
You're right.
Everything.
Well, I do actually like Willamette. It would be interesting to make that beer with Willamette.
There we go. We're collaborating right now.
A little bit of Perle and Hallertau Mittelfrüh for this beer. And it's not a hoppy beer per se, but I think when you kind of smell it a little bit, you definitely get a little bit of that hop aroma and that hop note. It's fairly complex, but you have to look for it.
It's just such a great beer.
It's tasty, awesome. Man. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Those are the two hops I use probably 70% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mittelfrüh is one of my favorites.
Perle. Yeah. Love them both.
It's delicious, and this beer is, I don't want to call it like a malt soda, because that to me, that's like saved for Bud Miller Coors, right? But this is like the essence of the malt, and you do have to kind of search for hop flavor at all, and maybe you don't even notice it. It's just a malt showcase.
Yeah.
And the carbonation level is perfect, and everything is just perfect, and once you swallow it and it leaves your tongue, it kind of is, it's dry a little bit, but you still get that, I don't know, that the essence, like the perfumey malt.
Yes.
Just kind of just the middle portion of that malt character. It's really well done.
So when you're going to cap it off for carbonation, what do you let it get down to? What are you looking for? How do you know?
Usually we look for about 1 to 1.5 Plato before it gets to final gravity, basically, when we cap it off.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't always hit it perfectly, but we try to get as close as possible. We have a little bit of a range, obviously, because nobody's at the brewery overnight, so we have to catch it in the morning.
Oh, that's a good point. I never even thought about that. Yeah, fermentation doesn't just happen during business hours.
Yeah. Yeast doesn't punch in and out.
Yeah. All right, yeast. Yeah. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll wait till tomorrow to finish.
It's whoever has the pager.
Yeast sleep.
Whoever has the pager and it goes off, they got to go in.
Yeah. I'm being serious, though, that I never thought about leaving that bit of room for range, because there could be just a couple of percentage points dropped overnight, right?
Yeah, that's 4 to 6 points. So
in homebrewer terms. It's definitely enough time to make a major change overnight, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Do you guys have a house yeast strain that you're using, or are you getting commercially sourced stuff?
We have our own yeast propagation facility, so we have liquid nitrogen storage, so we store our own yeast cultures and probably use way too many different strains.
Oh.
But so we typically on a weekly basis propagate probably 1 to 2 strains just for various things that we use, so it's quite a bit of work involved for our QA department.
That's interesting. That's cool. To hear from not just a lager brewery, but a German lager brewery, to hear that you use many different strains. Is that just to keep things interesting and get the flavors that you're looking for?
I mean, I guess I'm a little bit of a traditionalist when it comes to that stuff. I think there's just like using different hop varieties or malt types, you do get different flavors and aromas from different yeast strains, even if they're subtle. You will produce different flavors and aromas that you're looking for.
Okay,
that's admirable, man.
Yeah,
go to all that trouble.
Yeah,
frankly, the average beer consumer probably can't tell the difference.
I guess. It's I love yeast, and I love what yeast can do in beer, and it's fascinating to see that. And we're fortunate that we have all the equipment that we need, so it makes it a little bit easier, but it's still just making sure that we don't combine anything or mixing anything up. So
yeah,
definitely more work involved with that.
What size batches are you brewing into?
So we started out with a 20 barrel system, which we still operate. And then about 3 years ago, we installed a 60 barrel system in a new facility. So we have both options still. And actually, we're in the process of installing a two barrel pilot brewery. So it's
wow.
We're kind of have all sizes available to us at this point.
Nice.
Small, medium, large.
So I want to get to another beer. I have to ask you though, Florian. You had us listed as trying Stammtisch next, but if it's all right with you, I kind of wanted to try the Urban Underdog next.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense. Yeah.
Cool. So Urban Underdog is what we're going to do, Bevo. And that you have listed as an American lager. And I just thought it would be a lot of fun to taste an American lager next to the Bavarian lager that we just had. So we're going to get that poured for us, and giving my crew here a chance to do that and taste it, I want to ask you a separate question.
Sure.
And that is, I'm curious what you think about IPA lagers, and I'm wondering if you do one of those. Like, I've had a couple recently that I've kind of liked, and it's a weird, you know, blend of styles, so I just thought I'd ask the German brewer opinion.
Of course, as a German, I would have to say that you can't make that, right?
Yeah, of course. I agree.
But we do make one. We call it Hopfen, which is the German word for hops.
Okay.
It's all German. It's Pilsner malt. It's German hop varieties, mostly Hallertau Mittelfrüh, dry hop with that, and using a lager yeast. So I do enjoy that beer. I think it brings out those nice classic noble hop aromas and flavors from the Hallertau hop varieties, combined with the complexity of an IPA. So it's an interesting beer.
What would your German family members say to you if you poured them that beer?
Surprisingly, most of them enjoy those kind of beers. You
okay.
would think that IPAs in Germany, or IPLs, whatever you call them, are not a big thing, but it just takes a little bit of education, and Germans surprisingly actually like hoppy beers. It's not a big trend yet, but it's definitely happening.
You know, I have noticed the same thing. When we started this program years ago, we had some German friends, and they weren't having it with the IPAs, you know, what was it, 13 years ago. But I, you know, when I went back last year, I sat at a craft beer bar in Munich, and they had IPAs and double IPAs and session this and session that. And so I think you're right that it really is changing over there. Even with manufacturers, there's a couple craft brewers in Germany, too.
Yeah, and actually, this is we actually have a fourth brewery in Germany. We bought a very small brewery a couple of years ago, and this is kind of my hobby project, I guess.
Oh, nice.
It's just north of Munich, a 20 hectoliter system, and we're making an IPA or a pale ale there, and I get to go back and forth every once in a while, which is fun.
That's
kind of observing
cool.
the German market.
I've heard that Bamberg is like the craft beer place in Germany now. A lot of different breweries there.
A lot of different breweries, a lot of traditional breweries, but also around there the brewery density is definitely very, very high. It's a great city. If you ever go, definitely worth going there. Not just for the beer. The city's fabulous. And
okay.
Old town. So
yeah, that's on my list.
And history right there.
Okay. Oh, I can't go wrong with that. All right. So now we do have the Urban Underdog in our glass. And I wonder if you could tell us, you know, some of the differences even in ingredients and what you were going for to make an American lager versus your Bavarian.
So St. Louis being having a lot of history in lager beer brewing, we thought we'll try an American lager that would have been traditionally brewed here in town. And we made this beer, we started brewing this, I think, about 2 to 3 years ago, so fairly early on, and always kind of kept it around most just on draft, basically, in the brew pub. and the brewers enjoyed it. I enjoy it, and we'll, yeah, what we're trying to do is just trying to recreate a classic American lager. So we do use a little bit of corn, about 20% corn. We still use the Pilsner malt, and we do use a little bit more caramel malt just to bring out the sweetness a little bit more and increase the color.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using a light and caramel, like 10 or
what's that?
A light caramel malt, like 10 or 15?
Yeah, a lighter caramel malt. And then the hop varieties, that's basically a blend of European varieties, Mittelfrüh and Hersbrucker, and then we also use Cascade and Willamette. It's a pretty lightly hopped beer. It's about 15 IBUs. But if you look for the hop aroma, you'll definitely find a little bit of that fruity note from Cascade and Willamette, and then the classic aroma note from the Mittelfrüh and Hersbrucker. So again, it's very subtle, but it's definitely there.
Yeah, it's another great beer. It's very, very different than the Bavarian. For my taste, I will drink the Bavarian any day of the week.
Yes,
I agree.
Yeah. However, this. Is probably one of the best, if not the best, American lagers I've had. It's very clean. It does. I don't know. It's reminiscent of like a light American lager.
Yeah.
That's a better word than saying that it's just a light American lager because it has so much more flavor. So instead, it's just kind of reminiscent of one. Like you can tell what you were going for, but you just made it better.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an old friend in there when you drank light American lager.
Yeah, the corn definitely comes through, and I think that's what you're talking about.
And okay. It is lower in carbonation too, so you don't.
Oh, that's true.
You don't get that bite.
Is that intentional, Florian, on this one? Lower carbonation.
Yeah, we definitely don't want it too aggressive on the carbonation, and I guess people sometimes drink it out of the can, which is fine. So that probably helps with that.
That's true. I would drink it out of the can. That's what kind of guy I am, though.
That's true. You're a can guy.
Those are your roots.
Yeah. That's right. Ice cold and out of the can.
Yeah, just put me in the desert on a boat somewhere.
You've given up on the 40s. That's good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Beardy.
Do the finishing gravities vary significantly between the Bavarian and the American lager?
It's definitely a little bit lower. Yeah, it's a little bit lower in OG. So it's about a 4.5 ABV. The Bavarian lager is closer to 5. So it's a few decimal points lower, but. I mean, I guess not that significantly. It's definitely lighter beer. And the idea definitely was to recreate kind of that classic lighter American beer and I don't know for sure because I never had one 100 years ago, obviously. I would think that was similar to the beers that probably would have been brewed in the U.S. 50 to 100 years ago. Again, that's just my assumption. Or sure.
It's a nice crispness that's different from the two. The American lager is definitely, you can taste drier and it's a bit crisper.
Okay.
Yep.
So I see 4.5% is more of like a current sort of like a state of the American lager. Did they brew them stronger that far back?
I guess that's doing some research. I would think that most of them probably would have been between 4.5 and 5.
Same.
That's kind of the session beer ABV that beers probably were and are still for the most part. I guess the really light beers are 4 and below, but the regular strength American lagers are between 4.5 and 5.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the main differences that it sounds like you were going for with this, I mean, I guess you could say like pre-prohibition lager, is that it's a malt beer instead of all adjunct, right? Instead of rice, which would have been like post-prohibition American lager.
Yeah, and we only use about 20% of the corn, so it's not a huge amount, huge percentage. Mm-hmm. We do use 2-row barley malt, though, so it's not 6-row, which would have been traditionally used for that. We do make a pre-prohibition beer with 6-row barley as well, which is, again, a little bit different and just using American hops in that. But, it's an interesting little beer and nice for the summer when it's hot up.
Okay.
Do you have any trouble going back to the 6-row, brewing with 6-row, or what's the difference in that one? I have kind of on my bucket list.
To try it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To try brewing with some 6-row.
they're harder to get these days. There's a lot less being grown for malting. I think overall you probably get a little bit more flavor out of it. And again, I think the reason why corn or rice was used is to kind of compensate for that slightly coarser flavor of the six-row barley. And just to kind of recreate the beers the European brewers were used to.
I've got a beer that I use a lot of corn in, and I really wanted to try a bunch of six row in it. And I just wanted a few.
Yeah, what do you think?
Had any issues with it?
Are you thinking, Doc, that it's tougher to use?
There's probably maybe not, but it's good. I don't want to come out of the gate, you know, and, I wish I would have done that.
Florin, what do you think? Do you have to change any of your process when you use it?
Maybe, just because it's a little bit more, I'll just say coarse for the lack of a better term. Maybe up the addition of corn or rice just to compensate for that a little bit so that it's not overly coarse or unbalanced.
Okay.
Yeah. Would you change the water in any particular direction?
I wouldn't. I would definitely acidify it a little bit, just like any other beer. But okay. not significant.
No need in this case. Okay.
Yeah, this one, the beer I would use it on it, but has a lot of corn.
Yeah.
Some people say a shit ton of corn, but I just I don't want to exactly do a whole batch of beer and say, oh, it could have been better if I would have just done this. And if you're experienced with it, I'd like to hear your insights.
Yeah, as I said, I think maybe just add some corn or rice to compensate for it. But other than that, I wouldn't change anything significantly on the brewing process. I think it's pretty similar. It does have a little bit more enzymes and can take the addition of the corn or rice. And but other than that, I don't think there's anything that significantly different.
All right, I have a question. I want to use my million-dollar word. I should have asked this about this Vickle, but it's going to go for any of your beers. Do you decoction mash and find that to be the only way to get these beers tasting traditional?
Yes, and I don't know. Yes, as in we actually do use a single decoction mash for Zwickel. Is it the only way to make it taste that way? I can't say that we have tried to recreate those flavors differently, but I would imagine that it'd probably be pretty hard to do. You're thinking adding some specialty malts or some caramel malts?
Well, not even that. Here's the long-running, about 13-year debate on the Brewing Network, and it's more between one of our favorite guests, Dan Gordon from Gordon Beer Brewing Company. Listeners love him as well. We love having him in here. And our listeners, for that matter, some of them, who just think that the highly modified modern malts, so whether you have to add other things or not, actually, just the fact that our base malts are so highly modified that it's just no longer necessary to do decoction mashing. That's kind of the running debate that's been going on here for years.
Well, I think it is not. When you look at the malt quality, I would agree that it's not necessary because you don't really have to break down any other compounds during the decoction mashing. But I think what still happens is the reactions between those compounds, and you create some caramel-like flavors and aromas and some additional color by boiling the mash. So I do agree that it's not necessary from a malt quality standpoint, but I do think that you get some additional flavor and colors that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise.
Okay. Are you doing a malt? What's your fermentation or what's your mash profile like? Are you doing a decoction with a multi sack rest, or is it just going from your sacrificial rest to mash out that you're doing the decoction?
We pull the decoction mash into another vessel, boil it, and then pump it back to target another sacrification temperature. So it's basically a two-vessel process. We leave the main mash in the main mash tun, or depending on the brewery that we're operating in, the one brewery, we pump it into the louder tun, boil the remaining partial mash, and then pump that back into the louder tun to basically get the combined higher temperature, and then start loudering. But it's always a main mash and then decoction mash process.
But you're going from, say, something like 146 up to 154, not 150 up to 165 or something like that with
and
the decoction.
And I have to convert
Celsius.
It
in.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
But you did say that they were two sacrification rests, it sounded like.
Yeah, there's always we typically always do two. Yeah, it's 62, which is...
That's okay. You can just do it in C. That's all right.
That's about 145, 146, I think.
Okay.
So when you boil the mash, obviously that stops the conversion, right? I mean, at that temperature, it's going to stop. What effect does that
have? In the decoction mash. But when you pump it back, there's still plenty of enzymes. And you only boil about a third, roughly, of the total mash. So the remaining main mash still sits at that temperature and still has plenty of enzymes. So when you pump it back, you still have some enzymes that work.
And you say plenty of enzymes, you're saying? Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thanks for pointing that out.
So, 62 is about 144. Yeah. And then our mash off target temperature is, we'll call it 162.
Okay.
Or the combined temperature that we're targeting.
Right.
Okay.
Justin just doesn't want to decoction mash at my house again. I made him stir for hours.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just always find this, it's just such an interesting conversation all the time because they're so like polarized. I love that Dan Gordon comes in here and is just a staunch believer in decoction mashing. Yes, he's a... And I think that he feels the same as you do, Florian, that it's the other things that are happening during the process that make the beer what it is, you know.
It would be interesting to ask your brewer friends if they've ever tried, and I can't say that I have, tried decoction. Basically, making the same beer using decoction mash and then just using an infusion mash to see what differences you get.
And doing the side by side,
the color will definitely be higher with the decoction mash. And I want to bet that the flavors you get, the malt and mostly malty flavors you get from that as well are stronger and more pronounced.
Yeah. I think that Dan would never agree to, say, a blind taste test because he has just put his stamp on decoction, too, right?
Yeah.
But I like your idea, Florian. We really should do it and just have somebody, not me, do a decoction mash. And then somebody just do the regular single infusion. And it would be interesting. But I think... Yeah, like the melanoidins always come up, right? And all those different reactions that happen by boiling it longer and stirring and stirring and stirring.
Yeah. Well, and you know Doc could have rigged something to stir for you.
Right.
You know he could have.
By the way, he probably was done with his decoction mash like 2 hours before he told me.
Right, so you didn't screw it up.
No, we did a three.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Are we almost done?" "Yeah, we're almost done." I go, "Let's put this back in there."
Yeah.
And then stir it again. And then, okay, we bring it back. I'm like, "Okay, now we're going to go for the third one."
Yeah.
I got pictures of him just with this sad look on his face.
Well, Florian, I got to get us to a break, and then we want to come back and try a couple more beers with you. You got time to hang out?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a quick break, and I want to remind you guys, you know, we're talking about clean sour beers right now, but don't forget about our friends over at Mellow Mink Brewing Company. Dr. Lambic and his Sour Beer Blog team have been the longest-running sponsors of our show, The Sour Hour, and now they're opening a sour and farmhouse-focused brewery in central Pennsylvania. So help get them started and join the Founders Club. Founders Club includes 8 exclusive bottles of club-only aged and blended sour beer, early access to all of their public bottle releases, a hooded sweatshirt, a pair of tasting glasses, a club growler, and a metal challenge coin, not to mention discounts and much more. So you can learn all about this over at the Founders Club by going to mellowmink.com. Check out Mellow Mink Brewing at mellowmink.com and support our friends. They support us. And by the way, we've got a Berliner Weiss to try today, too, from Urban Chestnut Brewing Company.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so stick with us here. We're talking to Florian. Go to urbanchestnut.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Ooh, baby, don't you know I suffer?
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Home Brewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the BrewingNetwork.com.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five-star treatment today.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
Hello, this is David Walker from Firestone Walker Brewing Company. You are listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
That's right. Thanks for sticking with us and welcome back to the program. We are still talking to Urban Chestnut Brewing Company. And before we go on, I wanted to let you know, you guys remember our friends over at Fast Ferment? You know, one of the best-selling and least expensive 14-gallon conical fermenters on the market. Well, now they've got a much heavier duty the 14-gallon one, then the 7.9-gallon fermenter. 30% thicker walls, 30% larger valve, and 30% thicker solid steel stand. Almost all the parts are interchangeable on both models, the 7.9 and the 14, and the lids and thermowell spigot, thermometers, all that stuff. So the Fast Ferment won a gold medal at NHC last year. In addition to many other brewing awards, it's even used by the pros. One of Canada's largest breweries uses several of them for test batches. So check them out. You can go to fastbrewing.com and see the new 14-gallon Fast Ferment. All right. We've still got Florian on the line with us here, and we are talking German-style beer done here in America.
Yeah. Have we talked about lagering times at all?
No. It's a good question, though, especially because, you know, Tasty on our program here, Florian, will often ask brewers about whether or not they shorten their lager time.
You know, when I spoke in Dublin...
Sorry for that setup.
Just mostly right before I spoke, some German, like, young woman, she's a German, talked about German lagers and how to make them.
Yeah.
And... I could tell it. Half the audience wanted to ask them about fast lagering.
Oh, right.
Finally, some guy did. This is nuts. So then, of course, they came up in my talk, and I wasn't talking about that, but people asked me about it. And Palmer brought it up as well. So it's like the conference, as she talked, the conference is all about, like, why you don't have to do that necessarily.
Okay.
Extensive
lagering. Florian, what's your regimen? I'm sorry to interrupt.
anywhere... Probably 3 weeks is probably on average. I think
three weeks
for some of those strong, we make some Bock beers and maturing those a little bit longer definitely works. But I don't think, as long as your diacetyl is reduced, I'm not sure if there's a whole lot of benefit to mature for a whole lot longer than that.
Are you saying 3 weeks from brew day to finish, or 3 weeks lagering?
3 weeks lagering.
Right.
I mean, we're brewers. If in the summer, if you need a beer a little bit quicker, that sometimes happens. But on average, I think that's a pretty good rule.
And what temperature?
We try to get as close as possible to zero, so 32 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
If possible, even a little bit below that, but that's not always possible just with the setup that some breweries have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, it's nice to hear that St. Louis went metric. You know, I didn't know they'd switched over.
Yeah.
I haven't been back in a while.
That's right.
The whole city is. We're trying
to it's all kilometers there. Didn't change your speedometers.
Didn't InBev buy them, too?
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. The whole city.
They own St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where they started.
Oh, the irony.
There's a few holdouts.
Florian included. Imagine that irony that if,
waiting for an offer.
If Urban Chestnut ever gets bought by the neighborhood brewery Anheuser-Busch.
Mm.
I think we're a little too small. I mean, we're certainly having fun, and I don't know. I haven't been approached yet, so it's all good.
Now we'll continue
what we're doing.
Good.
You're already looking at your first boat.
Yeah. Well, also, Florian, you could be like, God, you could have just paid me more back then. You'd have saved a lot of money. Yeah. You don't got to buy my brewery now.
Well, have we...
Something along those lines, yeah.
Florian, have you ever tried to do any sort of, like, crank a lager out the door faster than a six-week turnaround time?
I think 6 weeks is definitely long. It really depends. Some of the lighter beers, and we also make... Yeah, the Urban Underdog, for example, that's a fairly light beer. That doesn't really need that extensive lagering period. To me, the biggest thing is, as I said before, the diacetyl reductions that basically get rid of the buttery flavor and aroma. I'm not a big fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, obviously, you want to remove some of the yeast that's sitting around and just kind of mellowing out the flavor. And I don't think that for some of the lighter beers, when I say lighter beer, I'm thinking 5% ABV, you don't need 6 weeks.
Okay.
You may need some of that time for double Bock, but five ABV beers, I don't think that's necessary.
To Warren's point, I meant 6 weeks in total from pitch to package.
Yeah, but I think that's what he's saying. He said 3 weeks it should be plenty of time after the ferment,
is
what Florian said.
Yeah, so fermentation for us takes about... I'd say 10 days is probably long. So 7 to 10 days for, okay. for a lager. If you take longer than that, I think you either didn't pitch enough yeast or there's something else not right. I don't think it should take longer than that.
So your average is, what, 5 weeks maybe?
Start
to finish?
Probably four weeks, more realistic,
Cool.
Well, see, now you don't sound like such a crazy person opening a lager brewery.
No, not at all.
Getting that done in 4 weeks. Okay, in our glass now, we have the Stammtisch, which, by the way, is probably my favorite German word. could you tell us and our listeners what the Stammtisch is?
So the word itself is basically describes a gathering of locals that always meet at the same bar or the same pub at the same time at the same table, and that's basically it means regulars table. And if you go into most bars in Bavaria, you will find that's still a tradition. There's several of those in the town where our German breweries, and it's kind of fun. Some of those guys meet on a daily basis. Some only meet once a week.
Yeah.
But it's just they're getting together. They're going to have a few beers. Sometimes they have more than a few beers. It's just for hours or longer than that, and just talk and enjoy life. And that's kind of what we wanted to recreate with that beer.
And here's why I love it so much, too, this concept, is because if you go into the local bar and sit at the Stammtisch table,
right.
and you are not part of the Stammtisch, they might either politely or not politely ask you to get out away from the table.
Oh, wow.
am I right about
not
that?
Not very politely.
It's mostly not very politely, right? Yeah. It's
it's fun. The brewery in Waltzach, our German brewery there, it's a fairly small town, and it's still fairly traditional, and people kind of probably would look at you weird, but if you start talking to them, I think they, for the most part, would be interested in what you have to say. And I think after a while, after a couple of beers, they'd be very friendly. It may take a couple of beers, but after that, people are definitely open to
as long as they don't start swinging.
Right. And they will. And that's why I kind of described it the way I did. It's because it was described to me very much like Florian is saying, like, initially, get out of the damn seat. But then after a while, you might be invited to hang out with the guys.
Well, that's on my bucket list. I want to go to a Stammtisch and bust it up. Hey, it's me, guys. Come on, let me in.
I've just always liked the concept because, obviously, you know, every bar has regulars. Here in the U.S., we just call them regulars, right? But it's not very common to actually reserve a table or what. Like, that is the Stammtisch, and you don't fuck with it.
So they might have, regulars might have their own stool or what at the bar.
So I've always just really loved this word and this concept. It's
so the staff doesn't save the table?
And some guys, when they walk in, as soon as they walk in, the waiter or waitress brings them their beer because they always drink the same stuff. So it's a lot of tradition.
Yeah,
doesn't get changed ever.
Americans, it's the equivalent of norm, right?
Yeah.
But on Cheers, except
same spot.
There's 10 of them, or however many there might be in the local regulars. And to answer your question, Beardy. Whether or not the staff actually saves the table or not, I think over time they don't have to. Everybody knows not to sit there, and the ones who do sit there are the ones who get moved.
Sometimes clearly politely, the sometimes newbies. Not.
Because it's just the local town, right?
Right.
So everybody knows.
Because that's what I worry about as someone who wants to go visit Germany. I see an open table at some point.
place is full except
for one table. Now I can't sit there? That's what I'm wondering.
I would not sit there if I were you.
Okay.
All right. He has the beard. He can sit there.
Yeah.
I might get away with it. But
you might get away with it.
I also might get in a fight.
Well, more importantly, tell us about the beer called Stammtisch, please.
So we call it a traditional German Pilsner, although it's probably a little bit hoppier and a little bit more bitter than most Pilsners you would get in Germany at this point. So it's a solid 35 to probably closer to 40 IBUs. In this case, we're, again, using Hallertau hops, Hallertau Mittelbrühe, and Hersbrucker, but also a variety called Striffelspalt from France, from Alsace, which is just on the... basically, German-French border along the Rhine. It's a very small hop growing area. It's a, it's an old variety, very low alpha content, but very nice, very herbal, definitely very distinct. And the beer, the hops are only added in the brew kettle, so it's not dry hops. Very, very classic, and definitely has a kind of a dry, bitter finish with a lot of hop aroma and a lot of hop flavor. Only Pilsner malt. This is not decocted, so that's just a regular stepped infusion mash.
Okay.
And our lager yeast. So I guess very classic ingredients, classic blend of hops, but definitely a higher hopping compared to some of the beers you would get in Germany.
Okay. I also love this beer, and I like that you overhopped it a little bit. In this case, I like it because it really stands out against the Zwickel.
Yeah.
You know, whereas we were really talking about the malt and the slight sweetness that was in that and how all of those wonderful qualities stuck out. In this one, by contrast, as Florian's saying, you can really focus on the hops while still being a clean lager. Like, I would, these two beers are such a great education, in my opinion, between the difference of a Bavarian lager and a Pilsner.
Just the Bavarian and the German Pilsner. There's a definitely a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you make it a little more hoppy in order to make those two stand out a little bit, or did you just like...
I think that's one of those trends that I think over the last, let's call it, 20, 30, 40 years, a lot of those beers have been the hop rate has been reduced and the IBUs have been reduced. I think this beer, again, is probably closer to what Pilsners used to be like 30, 40, 50 years ago. So I do think that a beer like that would have existed, and that's what we wanted to do. We just wanted to have a beer that really has very crisp hop finish and hop bitterness that just stands out from some of the other examples that are around.
And it does. Like, yeah. I mean, I always try to think of like Pilsner as the original IPA anyway. It was like the hoppy beer.
Right.
And this is just such a rad example of that. I love the slight bitter bite that's at the end of this beer.
Yeah. Okay.
It is not overly bitter. You know, that's the thing.
It's not cloying anything like that.
This is part of our IPA debate in here, is that I'm the fan of not the bitterness from IPAs, but the
alcohol.
Alcohol. Yes, exactly. The flavor of those dry hops. In this beer, I'm actually a fan of the bitterness. Like, it's that little bite that I really like about it. Because it's not overly bitter either. I mean, what are the IBUs on this, Florian?
It's between 35 and 40, it's bitter, but it's not IPA bitter.
Right. Typical pale ale range.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well, that explains why. Yeah. Typical American pale ale range?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, well,
And you're saying, because that's my favorite beer.
Right.
I see.
That's why it's fall, right in
It's in my wheelhouse. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Pilsner, the last good IPA.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I love this beer. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
Thank you. I guess the big difference to a pale ale is just that the hopping is so much more... the malt, though... It's in this case, it's only Pilsner malt, so it's very clean. There's not a whole lot of malt sweetness to kind of buffer or compensate for that bitterness. That's why the bitterness just stands out a little bit more.
Yeah. And they add a lot more hops with dry hopping and things to boost the hop flavor, which kind of helps make it more intense also.
And this has none of that. This is just kettle hopped, you said.
It's all kettle hopped, yeah.
Yeah. Where is this on your bestseller list there?
So we just started releasing that in cans, so it's I don't have any numbers, but I mean, it's selling well. People do enjoy that beer, so it's probably at the end of the year be interesting. But I wouldn't be surprised if that makes up, or will make up about 5 to 10% of our total volume pretty soon.
Wow. Well, all of these beers, really, but particularly this one and then the Zwickel, my close number two. I don't think you're distributed in California, but these would be in my fridge all the time. I know you'd have kegs of these beers.
Oh, yeah. I'm giving these high marks on every one of them.
I'd have an IV.
How many molars would you give this beer?
How many molars? Doc's a dentist, of course. Where do you distribute your beer?
Mostly... Midwest, so we're St. Louis, Chicago, Indianapolis, Kansas City. So really 4 to 5 hours around St. Louis right now. We don't really go much beyond that at this point.
How about Colorado?
Yeah.
Right.
That's not quite there yet.
Okay. Is that a growth decision that you've made, or are you concerned about shipping your beers long distances?
Yeah, it certainly gets tougher to sell beer once you're further away from your home market, just to be able to ship fresh beer, and I think it kind of loses a little bit of its relevance because you don't we'll have two breweries here in town. People can come to our place, they can see what we're doing, so it's much easier to kind of tell our story versus just sitting on a shelf somewhere in a supermarket. So it's definitely an easier way to sell beer in your local market, but we're probably going to expand a little bit, but I don't see us doing or going nationwide at some point. It's definitely more of a local, regional play.
Okay. And two things. You decided to put your beer in cans. I think when I first had your beer, it was in bottles, in the cool, German-style bottles, too.
We still do those, too. It just seems like right now that cans are the growth opportunity, or everybody wants cans. So we still do our 500-mil bottles of most of those beers, but we just added the cans not too long ago. There's a demand for it in the marketplace, I guess.
Okay, and that makes sense. Then the second part I wanted to ask is you've chosen to do this. I don't even know how to describe it, but
the full pull-off top.
It's a full pull top instead of the little tab. Almost the entire top of the can opens into a large opening.
For you can drinkers.
Does it make you feel better if they drink it out of the can this way?
Yeah. Just curious.
Well, you definitely get more of the aroma. And again, it's one of those things that we talked to one of the suppliers, and they offered it to us, and we thought it was a cool idea, and it just filled a couple batches into those cans using those lids, and people really enjoyed it. So we use them quite a bit now.
It's cool. They're very different.
I like this lid for the pour out. If I want to take it and pour it into a glass, I like this.
It doesn't glug, glug, glug.
I like the other one. It's kind of like a sippy cup. You know, you don't spill it as easily.
That's true. Well, I like it for the same reasons, although I will say when I first opened it, I was worried about the pour out. Yeah, not for the glug, but I thought it was going to spill all over the place. But it actually pours perfectly.
Poured nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works pretty well.
No, they're really cool.
I love the cans.
Yeah.
Like it in the can?
All right. And now we're on to, although I'm still finishing my Stammtisch, damn it. But we are on to our fourth and final beer from Urban Chestnut. And now this one you have to say the name of for me, Florian.
So the name behind that is Kudamm, and it's a big boulevard in West Berlin called Kurfürstendamm, which is pretty famous, and everybody in Germany would know about that.
Okay.
But of course Berliners are lazy, so they shorten it to Kudamm, and we're just basically paying homage to Berlin by calling it after that big boulevard in Berlin.
Nice.
It's like the Strip in Vegas.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, that's what it is.
Yeah. Got it. And I love how you go, and the Berliners are lazy, so they shorten it. I've heard the same thing about you Bavarians, by the way, and everything.
Well, that's totally true. Yeah,
yeah.
I would definitely say that too.
A lot of Bavarian slang comes from lazy tongues.
Yeah. I would say you're wrong, but that takes too much work.
Yeah.
This beer tastes great.
Yeah, so this is the Berliner Weiss from Urban Chestnut, which we're having
a great time.
Plain, I guess. I don't want to say plain, because what I'm getting at is it sounds like at the brewery you serve these in a traditional way where you actually add house-made syrups.
Mid-hef or whatever?
Mid-syrup.
Yeah, we have our chef make some syrups that we offer. I personally preferred without that.
Okay.
Yeah. But some people like the added sweetness. They like the added fruitiness, so they enjoy that. But I think for the true Berliner Weiss taste, that almost lemony tartness that you get from that beer, I really like that, and it's nice, tart and refreshing. Again, great for the summer when it's hot out.
Oh yeah.
How do you sour this beer?
We do a kettle sour. So we have our own strain of lactobacillus that we use for every batch, and we just let it sit in the kettle and let it sour for, depending on pitch rate, between a day or 2 days.
So will you bring it to a boil first and then add your pitch, or will you just throw it in
there? We boil it afterwards, okay, very briefly, just to kind of pasteurize it, but not before.
Stop all the bad things.
So you leave what's in the malt already. You just add your own lacto to kind of dominate.
Yeah, we and then actually the lactobacillus that we have, they're actually grown up from malt. So we isolated those from what we found on some Pilsner malt, and have conserved that culture and grow it up for every batch, and it seems to work really well. We really like the flavor. It's very clean, as I said, that lemony tart.
It's a lot
character.
Lot mellower tart than a lot of Berliner Weisses that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sharp and biting at all. It's just, that's really nice.
But it's tart and has dimension.
Yes, it does.
Also, it carries through. It's not just a watery
Not at all. It's there.
No, it's still got some malt character, some body for sure. Yeah.
A lot less oxidation than a lot of Berliner Weisses that we taste as well. Yeah. Good job on that, Florian. Is kettle sour the traditional way to do Berliner Weiss?
I guess traditionally not. They would have. It's interesting, actually. I've looked into the history a little bit. They actually did ferment it with, after the brew house process, they would ferment it with either mixed cultures or have separate areas where they would do their lactic fermentation and the Saccharomyces fermentation, and then kind of blend it. But not having a brewery dedicated to Berliner Weisse, that's just a little too risky for me. So we're using that process, realizing that it's a little bit of a compromise. And but I think the result that we get is pretty good, and pretty happy with it.
Oh yeah,
I'm happy with it.
You really
definitely
should.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah, I like this a lot, and I like that you offer the syrups at the brewery for.
Yeah, not a lot of places do that.
Exactly,
it's just a kind of link back to tradition that not a lot of people know. It's furthering beer education in a way too.
What syrups do you do?
It kind of varies over time. Whatever our chef is, we buy a lot of local ingredients when we find them. So whatever is available from elderflower or blackberry or even plum syrup. So depending on what's available right now, we make up different syrups.
That's cool too. So that's seasonal.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on Woodruff,
Wilson?
Definitely an interesting one. Unfortunately, we have a garden behind the brewery, and our gardener just said, "Should I grow some Woodruff?" And I had to pull it up, and unfortunately, there's some compound in there that's I guess
harmful.
Lethal. we can't do that. So the syrups you can buy, they have Woodruff flavoring in it, but not actual Woodruff anymore. That's all I've ever had is the Woodruff syrup made with Woodruff flavor, not the actual plants. I can't say that I've experienced the real thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Even the German syrups are Woodruff flavoring, not the actual plants?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting kind of herbal.
It's a weird flavor.
Yeah,
definitely.
Herbal is probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I had a customer bring in a Woodruff syrup when I had the Berliner Weiss on in the pub. He brought me a whole bottle of it. It was a bizarre flavor.
That's actually what I've heard about it, too.
Yeah. It's nothing you put on pancakes or find in your home.
Yeah.
But it's almost familiar, though.
Okay.
It's kind of weird. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange herbal green flavor.
Okay.
This almost tastes like it has fruit essence in it. It's fruity enough.
Just in the beer, yeah. Well, that's that, I think.
The tartness.
The lemony flavor he was talking.
Yeah.
Crisp lemony zip, as Nicole likes
to
say.
But like an apricot, like an unripe apricot.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of a thing. Maybe. I don't know. I think it tastes great the way it is. I wouldn't dirty this thing up with any syrup, man.
I like
spoken
dirty.
Like a true German.
Hey, Florian, is there a lot of wheat malt in this beer?
Yeah, we do 50% wheat malt 50%? In that. Cool.
Nice. And the rest is what?
Pilsner.
It is Pilsner malt. Okay.
Yeah.
And what yeast do you use to ferment after the boil?
It's a German ale yeast, so similar to an alt yeast that's pretty clean and pretty rapid fermentation. It doesn't take very long to reduce the sugar, so it's pretty quick to get it down to final gravity once we cool it down from the short boil. Mm-hmm.
Well, you are killing it, Florian. All of these beers were really fantastic. Definitely. I got to thank you for taking the time and effort to send them to us so we could talk about them with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very, very happy to do that. Very happy to hear that you guys enjoyed those beers. Very, very, very nice to hear.
We will be waiting anxiously for you to start distributing in Colorado or California, where it's available to us. And in the meantime, listeners, if you ever want to send us Urban Chestnut beer, we will happily receive it.
That's true.
So, two things. If I remember correctly, with my emails with Ashley, you guys are going to have a presence at the HomebrewCon this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's actually going with her husband and going to bring some beer. So if people haven't been able to try us or try our beers, we'll be there for the, awesome. I think there's a big tasting for commercial beers.
Yes there is. That's great news. Tons of our listeners will be at that event. So please do go check out the Urban Chestnut table at the Pro Night.
And they were also very generous in the beer that they sent, and this is not even close to half of what they sent.
Oh, so. Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Poker night at Beverly's.
No, I'm sending that home with you.
I've already been bugging Ashley so we can get some when we're in Minnesota.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Poker night at Bevo's.
Listeners, you can go to urbanchestnut.com and check it out. You can learn about events that they do, their local efforts to help out the area, and, of course, all about their beers and where you can find them. Florian, thank you again for being with us. I appreciate it.
For sure.
It was very much fun. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care. I hope we see you soon.
Sounds good. See you guys. Thank you.
Later, man.
All right. There you go.
Can't get over that Berliner Weiss. Jesus.
I love
that. And the Underdog were my two favorites.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Wickel for me.
Oh, the American Lager.
Yeah, it's Wickel.
That was the American Lager, the Underdog.
Wickel.
Yeah, gosh. I would go back and forth, depending on which one was in my glass, between the Zwickel and the Stammtisch.
Yeah. Wow. You liked it that much?
I loved them both.
Wow.
And I really liked the Stammtisch. Although that's, I think, one of those like mental things, too. Right. I just love that name so much.
He wants a Stammtisch.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, just the bitterness in that beer is just so perfect. I loved it. But then I also felt the same about the malt sweetness in the Zwickel. So
yeah, I like this Zwickel too. The Stuntage wasn't my favorite out of these four beers.
Stumpy?
Stuntage. Stumpy.
Stumpy.
Good old Stumpy.
The Stumptage.
So you can have all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just want the Berliners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other.
Can you say the name of the Berliner?
I didn't even really hear it properly. What is it?
It's on there. You can't take them home if you can't say it.
I can't turn it sideways.
I get all the Berliners.
It's good enough.
Kudam.
Kudam.
Yeah.
Well, Warren's terribly, almost translucent fingers were in the middle of the fucking word. I can't see it.
Well, kudam. Now you have to share them with Doc.
It's kudam. Okay. That's fine. I can do that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, just awesome beer. So thanks again to Florian for, and it sounds like Ashley for getting us beer out here. The whole crew over there, we appreciate it very much.
Every single goddamn person.
Yeah.
All of them. All the peoples.
All right, I'm going to get us to a break.
I'll be in St. Louis the week after the
by the way.
I'll go by Urban Chestnut and check out the beers.
You should. That's like your thing now. Don't you go to, you go
anytime
home
I'm
after.
In the Midwest. Last time we were in Minneapolis, I did the same thing.
I see. That's why. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, then you might have to bring us back a beer tasting.
I might have to bring an extra suitcase.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good stuff. Okay. Before we go to the break, you guys remember iDip?
Yeah, of course.
Sure,
of course
you
do.
The Smart Brew Water Testing Kit incorporates a revolutionary photometer system, which is the first and only one on the market with its own app. You can use it for home or commercially, and it takes great water to make great beer. You all know that. So the only meter on the market that runs water tests with no math needed on your part. So, in other words, it was really designed for me.
Did you say cytophotometer?
No, just a photometer.
Okay.
Yeah, revolutionary one at that.
Aren't they all?
The iDip pairs via Bluetooth and updates your water results instantly to your own personal water profile. And the app is really the brain of the system. It allows limitless possibilities, including lab accuracy, free upgrades, and test customization. You can also email the results to your brewer friends or post on Facebook and let your homebrew club get the lowdown on your water profile, which that's cool. Like, I would have loved to do that when I was bugging Doc every time I did a brew day. Like, what do I add to my water? He's like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
If I would have been able to email him what was happening or through the app.
Or just ahead of time.
So like the Rare Barrel's using one now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we have like a B in one. So I give it to the Rare Barrel guys. And so they can do water tests on their stuff. And then their brewer, Mike, can email it to the entire staff.
Nice.
So it's either for your club, commercial brewers, whoever you need to have this water profile,
yeah.
they can totally do it.
I hope you got some sour beer out of that exchange.
Fuck. I'm a bad negotiator.
Not that he's going to tell you
like,
about
it. Here, have this.
Yeah, take it.
Okay. Anyway, you can test for things like total alkalinity, chloride, calcium hardness, pH, sulfate, and much more. Go check it out at smartbrewkit.com. And it looks like there's a little Brewing Network special. Podcast listeners enter code TBN10 at checkout and save $10 on either the standard or the advanced Smart Brew testing kit. So go to smartbrewkit.com, use coupon code TBN10, and get a discount. Thanks for doing that, iDip, and thanks for supporting the program.
Yeah.
What a cool product.
Yeah, they'll be at NHC, too. So if you want to check them out, George will be there. Cool.
Their booth is directly behind the Brewing Network's booth.
Oh,
I looked that up today.
Poor bastards.
I know.
They have no idea.
Be prepared. They're like, really irritated.
These are the assholes we've been supporting.
But I think, of all the people that we could be behind, they get it. So they're happy to support the BN and everybody, and they're happy to talk to you about the iDip.
Yep.
Because it's pretty cool. And you can try it right there. They'll just show you the thing, and you can see actually how easy it is. Don't take our stupid word for it.
Yeah. No, we're dumb.
Yeah. We're pretty stupid. Yeah.
I hung out at the booth in San Diego. They were also at NHC then, and they sold me on it there.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah.
Just before they said, shut the fuck up, Beardy.
Well, they did that when I walked up.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they shut the fuck up. Let me show you this.
You guys stop slinging the word we around here.
Oh, dear. I knew that was coming.
Oh, damn.
All right. I'm going to get us to a break. And when we come back, we got a few things left to do, including some very exciting things in the news this week. Yep. It's a controversial beer world that we live in. Hang in there. It's the session. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to bruise their vast selection.
With over 20 years of experience making world-class craft beer and more than 100 gold medals in international competitions, Moylan's Brewing Company is not just a pretty face in craft beer. Just ask Brendan Moylan.
What do we got here? The beer of the hour. Moylan's, gotta love that big M. It's like a sign of awesomeness. Woo-hoo! It's got an extra kick to it. Let's pour this bad boy. Oh, Moylan's. At the end of the night when the kids are finally in bed, the wife's in bed, nobody's bothering your ass anymore. That's Moylan's time.
Moylan's is for you. Yeah. It's to help you out. Yeah. It helps me out.
What?
Well, because it's freaking awesome. Northern California brewed. It's brewed with love.
With love?
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous.
And it's always best where?
Moylan's.
You gotta try it on tap at Moylan's in Novato. They're freaking awesome. Not only because I own the brewery, because I love the beer.
Cheers.
Boom.
Kilt Lifter Scotch Ale takes big beers to a whole new level with rich malt balanced perfectly with delicate hops, and now comes in four-pack tall boy cans so you can take the party on the go. Or come to the brewery, take a tour, and try any of Moylan's fresh creations right from the source. Check them out at Moylan's.com.
Army, have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y-Yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
Great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft line.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone certification program offers four levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version, too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
Hey, motherfuckers, this is Doug from fucking Society. You're listening to The Session on the fucking Bruin Network. Fuck you.
Yeah. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you to Urban Chestnut for being on the program and talking great beer with us and sending us great beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a good night. Take home some of that beer and put it down.
Tomorrow.
Did a great job of packaging those. They were all clean as hell.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those cans are really nice.
Will you drink it out of the can? Or will you pour it in a glass?
I don't know.
There's some extra ones, but you could pound one later.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. I want to try it out of the can. I want to try that wide mouth opening and see see what it's like.
See how you match up with
that. Drink the beer first, then try the wide mouth opening.
Yeah, good
it's
call.
That kind of talk that we don't appreciate here in craft beer anymore.
Yeah, Beardy. Yeah. We're trying to up the level of craft beer. We don't use dirty beer names anymore.
The BA won't talk about me anymore?
No.
We've drained the swamp on all that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But speaking of talking about good beer, I don't know if you guys have heard, but John Palmer, you know our friend.
John Palmer. Yes. John
Him and I are bros, man. We were hanging out.
John Palmer.
Another beer we won't talk about.
John Palmer.
The all-new and improved edition of How to Brew is out. I've got a copy in my hand. It is bigger and better than ever.
Yeah. 280 more pages.
Well, actually, this fourth edition includes 600 pages of extra material, and it's got some chapters in there, too. It's beautiful, by the way. I'm so proud of our friend, John.
Yeah. Inside cover just dedicated to you.
Yeah, it's right there. It says, Justin, I could never have done it without you.
The end.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. That's
I think you just copied the thank you from the last book, because you weren't in the last book,
either.
I think
you just changed the name.
Know. But Push is in the Push was in both.
He was?
Sven is in both.
Oh.
Yeah. So
good for them.
Credit where credit's due.
Yeah. Jamil Zainashev is in it. Sam Calagione, Jim Cook, Mitch Steele, Ken Grossman comments on the book.
Wow.
Nice.
I didn't even get asked to write the full one.
No, my fucking book is engagements. Why did I get mentioned?
Right?
Yeah.
Look, it's only $24.95, and
I already
have
mine in possession.
It is everybody's beer Bible. It's time to replace that old dog-eared copy of John Palmer's How to Brew.
I think I
saw
something today, like it's still available on EHA site, too.
Yeah, the pre-sale, I think.
Oh, okay.
They extended it or something.
Well, it's basically a totally new book. The fourth edition clocks in at 600 pages, and every chapter has been updated and expanded, and there are five totally new chapters. Whether you want simple, surefire instructions for making your first beer, or you're a seasoned home brewer working with all-grain batches, this book has something for you. From ingredients and methods to recipes and equipment for brewing beer at home, How to Brew is loaded with valuable information on brewing techniques and recipe formulation. Grab your copy at your preferred beer book vendor, you know, like our friends over at More Beer, for example, or buy it from the Brewers Association store if you want to get the book and support craft breweries at the same time. More info on the book is at brewerspublications.com. The thing's enormous now.
It's huge.
It's a Bible.
Dude, it's huge.
It's a Bible. Yeah.
That was my favorite.
Just a book landing on the desk.
No, the pages are bigger and there's more of them. It's like, yeah, it's like going on there.
That was my favorite homebrewing book before, and John found a way to make it even better.
Yeah. No, look at Beardy getting good at this.
By not including Justin in it.
Yes.
Right, or me, I'm sure. But for the fifth edition, John, I love this book.
Hit a brother up.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah, it's great, man. It's he's put obviously a ton of work into it, and it's the no holds barred approach to everything you need to know.
It is
about beer, man.
I mean, for a lazy guy, he really did put a lot of work in.
Right.
This.
Well, he has a lot of time sitting on planes when he's flying to Australia and Dublin.
Everywhere. Yeah, exactly.
And everywhere.
Well, hey, just because you're lazy doesn't mean you can't work in your mind. There's
what?
Something, right?
Is that what your mother told you when you were a child?
Well, because you're thinking, you know, because you're like, you're just typing. You're not like digging a fucking ditch or like, right. you know, changing a tire or whatever, right?
That's
it's not manual. You can be lazy and still be an author, right?
Physically lazy.
I think you're right.
Intellectually. Not lazy.
Intellectually.
Intellectually.
Hello.
I am very lazy.
I think you're all right.
I think we're all drunk.
Everybody's right.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we're going to do some beer news, right?
I'd rather not, actually, if that's cool with you. Just close the show.
Nothing happened this week, right?
There's some exciting stuff. All right, well, the beer news is brought to you today by craftbeer.com.
Oddly enough.
If you like cooking with craft beer, you should check out the recipes and pairings portion of the website at craftbeer.com. Published by the Brewers Association, craftbeer.com offers the most comprehensive collection of craft beer-based recipes on the web. It's really something to behold. Search and sort recipes by course and beer style. Find the perfect menu item. How about breakfast stout French toast stuffed with bourbon cream cheese frosting? That's a pretty good recipe pairing right there.
Yeah.
Head to craftbeer.com and search their craft beer cooking recipes and pairing ideas. So, what's in the news this week, JP?
Not a lot. There's a new glass formula.
All right. Oh. Well, we'll see you next week.
That's it for the news.
If you're plugged into Facebook at all, you've heard all this information, but not our take on it. Lagunitas, let's start off with Lagunitas, who in 2015 sold half of their company to Dutch mega brewer Heineken, has recently achieved their final form and completed the merger.
Really?
Oh, so they've gone clear.
Right. Yes, Heineken now owns 100% of Lagunitas Brewing Company. The move makes their sprawling campus the first ever Dutch-owned brew house to be located in Petaluma.
Okay, well, that's something.
Can you tell the point I wanted to drive home with that?
So are they wearing clogs now?
Oh, yeah.
Heineken's taking on weed then, huh?
Okay, yeah, cool. I guess I like so.
This. Owner Tony McGee announced on Tumblr, of all outdated places, quote, "They are a very big company and we are a small company. But at the core, we both want the same things. By going deeper into the heart of Heineken, we will be able to build a bridge from the vision for craft beer that Amsterdam shares with us and the operation companies who know their beer lovers."
What kind of bullshit is he peddling now? I liked his announcements with the first one.
It seems like he's gotten more corporate.
He drank that Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You know I'm a fan of Tony, but that statement right there, that's not even Tony's writing.
No, the first time out, I remember his main point was, his investors got paid off. I'm so happy.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
And Heineken handed him that statement and put his name on the end.
Or that
Redder blue pill.
Yeah. Or that was just a highly honed persona.
I guess
over the past 10 whatever years of just I'm just gonna be the crazy guy and whatever. But
until
you know, I think he was.
Billionaire.
I think he was more marketing than substance.
Yeah.
Anyway, where did I leave off? Right here, McGee will continue on as Lagunitas' executive chairman, apparently. In 2015, Lagunitas...
What is an executive chairman?
I have no idea. But it's their executive chairman, so I think he's just basically making sure that Lagunitas is still going to be brewing the same beers or whatever. I don't know.
I think it means they call him on his private jet wherever he is and just let him sit in on meetings.
He gets free trips to Europe.
He probably carries around that little plaque for his desk.
Executive chairman.
Wherever he's sitting on the executive chairman.
Whatever beach he's sitting on, he just throws it on the chair.
Yeah, I'd like to check into your hotel. Yeah. Do you have an executive chairman suite? I know you have the presidential suite and the honeymoon suite, but I...
Yes, Mr. McGee. It's in the basement.
You're right. It's in the bottom of the ocean. In 2015, Lagunitas was the sixth largest craft brewer in the U.S. Then the Dutch came with many, many zeros.
Yeah.
Heineken said that to retain the culture at Lagunitas, it would remain a separate business entity with the broader Americas region group.
Now or then?
Now. Founder Tony McGee will remain active as chairman, and the current management team will also stay the same. McGee will also be tapped to help Heineken develop the company's global and local craft strategy. Question, does this mean McGee will be headhunting more small breweries to bring into the foreign fold? Also, what does this mean for Moonlight Brewing and Brian Hunt, who sold 50% of his company to Lagunitas last year?
Man, good question. Oh. I wonder if he's feeling slighted.
Along with South End Brewery and Smokehouse in Charleston, South Carolina, and Independence Brewing Company, which is very ironic, in Austin, Texas. Are these now Dutch-owned breweries and no longer underneath the craft beer banner?
They must be. If the company that owned them was Lagunitas, and Lagunitas is now fully owned by Heineken, unless they sold off those...
Well, it was 50%, right? So then when Lagunitas got bought out for 50%, would that stand to reason that maybe they maintained their 50%? Either way, now that Heineken owns 100%, Heineken owns 50% of Moonlight Brewing Company.
Right.
I wish I had heard before today. I would have called Brian Hunt if he wants to be on the show.
I don't think for a second that when the first 50 went down, that they weren't already talking about the other 50 going to happen.
I'm sure they had
to hit milestones.
With Brian on that. So I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe there was some clause. I mean, I could see, for instance, come on, Heineken. You know, you're swell guys. Why don't you just cut that out and let him go back to being Moonlight Brewery?
On the other hand, that doesn't help him much either. I mean, the whole reason he went to Lagunitas is because the poor guy is still schlepping his kegs all over town, and he just needed a little hand. So I don't even know that he'd be happy with going back to where he was.
Companies like Boston Beer Company do some sort of like, you know, helping guys out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe Heineken should do the same thing in this case.
Yeah.
Well, or is Brian want out? Does he want to become...
He's talked about it eventually.
...to go all the way into Heineken's portfolio?
And did he just get a payday as well?
No. Brian wouldn't have gotten any money from that.
Why not? If 50% of his brewery was owned by Heineken and 50% of it was owned by Lagunitas, and now 100% of it is owned
by...
He sold half.
Yeah, he only sold 50 to Lagunitas.
Right. Okay, so did he now get paid on that 50?
Who knows? I don't know.
Well, no. Because Lagunitas paid him for the 50%.
It was already owned. Them
money. That's done. Yeah.
They own him.
Mm-hmm. Heineken bought the other 25 that, quote, Lagunitas
Well, that's
owned.
Too bad for Brian, and he should have waited.
So he's no longer Kraft.
Just the Kraft. Right.
So with this purchase,
right.
They've removed 4 Kraft brewers from the marketplace.
Exactly. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
What I think is even more interesting is each time this happens, it shrinks the craft beer segment's growth each year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking more gloomy. Every year the report comes out, the growth is shrinking. But it's because the biggest growers are leaving.
And if you don't think that strategy by the big guys, then you have your head up your ass.
Well, yeah. Right.
But
it could also help other people still looking to get into the craft segment.
Sure. I mean, hey, whoever was number 7 on that fucking list is now stoked.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Kicking back.
Yeah. Moving up the
Waiting
ladder.
Waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
Definitely moving up the ladder.
Answer that in the first ring.
Wow, that's okay.
Well. Is the answer on the first ring?
Yes.
That's a good term.
What's your number over here?
Should we move on?
Yeah, I don't know what else to say, really.
I'm wasted on that one.
In more depressing news for those who give a shit, North Carolina brewer Wicked Weed announced their plan to sell out to AB InBev, transforming their company from a local hotspot to another part of a Belgian-owned conglomerate.
Heard this one.
Their beers will be under an arm of the company called The High End, which run AB InBev's smaller breweries and imports. Those of you paying attention will have noticed that soon Wicked Weed beers will be considered at the same quality and taste and price level as Stella and Shock Top. High End indeed.
Yeah.
Did they say how much? Is it 100% buyout? Or are they
100%.
Still- Oh, yeah. It is 100%.
Yeah, that's what I read.
They fucking sold the fuck out. They're gone.
At least someone's getting paid in this industry.
I drink both of those. Well, not my first choice, but it's when they have it.
What?
Shock Top and Stella. Okay, give me Stella.
Of course Stella over Shock Top.
But if they don't have Stella, then it's like...
I don't know. I'll have a Bloody Mary.
Right. Yeah. I'll have water, bro.
Really, margarita with that?
Really?
Hey, ask Doc about changing brakes.
All right, order a whiskey.
It's all about the tapenade.
You know?
Tapenade.
Luke and Walt are friends of the show, and we've had them on the program. They are good guys. I'm happy for them. I'm curious how many millions, how many times of a millionaire they are now.
Because
I don't think Wicked Weed is in the $1 billion range.
No.
I don't think so either. But I bet they're in the hundreds of millions range.
No. I don't think so. Yes. Really? Yeah.
I do.
With the number of locations they had, the size of the brewery that they had.
And just that they're buying that brand.
Remember, they were millionaires before they started Wicked Weed.
They were?
Yeah. They made their money in like advertising, like apparently Proactive. They advertise like the Proactive line of like facial. So their money comes from corporate backing, anyways.
You're talking about the other family, the Grimms or something.
Not the Dickinson family.
No, okay.
Yeah,
Luke and Walt were just, Luke was a homebrewer that they thought, hey, let's do a brewery thing.
Yeah.
Walt says, okay, I'm in. Mm. Hey, that's how
okay.
But I don't know how much money they have in. Yeah. So I don't know how much money they're getting out.
And so now, even having this discussion that they have these wealthy partners lends me to believe that they might not. Luke and Walt might not have had a choice in this matter.
No. They could have fought it. Yeah. Sure.
And I don't know. Maybe they couldn't have.
They're not saying that. They're not saying.
All the press is like, we're gung ho, and we got approached by a bunch of other people, and we chose to do this.
You can write that into the legal agreement as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You're absolutely right.
And if I had tens of millions of reasons to not say anything bad about what happened,
he'll finally shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Is what'll happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't imagine them writing in that you got to make a statement, and it's got to say this. I really think. I take them at their word. I think they genuinely mean what they're saying.
Okay.
Luke and Walt.
So okay.
What are they saying? What do you think that they're saying?
They're saying, like,
it's
going to be a great thing for the company. It's what we want to, you know, it's going to really get us, you know, do what we want to do. Sure. Pretty much what Tony says.
You don't think they're calling you soon? No. One of two things. They want you on board. They really want you on board to, you know, just pro.
Yeah.
Or they want you to shut the fuck up. And you're going to be, what's your number?
I'm going to call that high-end.
Pretty low.
Look, you're in home brewing supplies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good move.
Yeah.
You're buying breweries. You need a podcast.
I agree.
It's the next step, man.
I've always said I'll sell out.
The next step. They bought up all the good ones, and now they got
a media outlet.
Now they need a media thing. They're going to hush the media.
Yeah.
I will shut my mouth.
I'll need a separate contract
for $20,000.
You would shut the fuck up, Beardy, for that?
No, I'm in the.
You want to retire community? So
he's already retired. We're talking about.
First, Anheuser-Busch has to start a brand called the Low End. Then they would buy out.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Okay. Hey, so what else about this?
They're listening.
Okay. Let me get back to where we were. Owners Walt and Luke Dickinson have said in no uncertain terms that nothing at the brewery will change. Quote, that was probably the most key part of that decision, he said, noting, and I didn't know which Dickinson was. I imagine it's Walt because he seems to be doing all the PR, but in a lot of these articles, they would say Walt and Luke Dickinson, and then they would just refer to Dickinson said. So anyway, noting that there was interest from other potential partners. Quote, this to us was a decision we made to move the company forward because we thought it would be the best thing for the people and the brand. Someone called Felipe Spazgigal.
I love that guy.
Weird name. President of the high-end division says that the key for AB was to amp up, not water down, independent breweries.
Okay.
Quote, to promote independent breweries. That's his key in acquiring them and not making them independent.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Yeah. It's not that it's corporate. It's oxymoron even to say it.
Take over all the store shelves and the taps. Yeah. That's not going to help the independent at all.
That's right.
That's kind of the whole thing was, okay, we're going to buy up these places and amp them up, and we're going to make everything better in the brewing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's more like you had like five Nazis at the top talking about the final solution.
Yeah, you wipe them out. By the way, if they were more interested in promoting independent breweries, they'd do something like Tasty mentioned, where like Sam Adams does, where they actually, rather than acquire breweries, they invest in them to let them promote and grow their own businesses. They incubate them. That's promoting independent breweries.
Right. Apparently not. Motivation is the U.S. beer market is shrinking, losing to spirits. Ooh. And so AB InBev has to show growth. How do they do that? By the biggest of the craft segment. So that way they're still growing in a shrinking market.
The stockholders are happy.
To their stockholders.
Yeah.
I don't know that math entirely works out. Not that I'm the one that should be referencing the fucking math. But I think that amount of growth is too much of a drop in the bucket for them to make a difference. I think there's something else going on, which has to do with just diluting the independent craft beer market. Price fixing in different ways, because once you start putting craft brands on the shelf, like a Wicked Weed or a Ballast Point, and you drive down the price, and maybe you drive up the price of a Bud Light or something, you put them on the level, and now you've kind of price-fixed a category. You've increased your own profits while reducing the profits of an industry. Like, in other words, I just think there's a lot more to it than just that, because those numbers are too small.
I agree.
Yeah. Wicked Weed's probably 50,000 barrels a year or something like that. Moving that to that side of the ledger pales in comparison to all the rest.
I think it is more brand solidification for the investors, right? So you go, okay, we have this division of the high end and all these craft air quote breweries that are here. We're pushing our premium line, right? Bud Light used to be their premium line.
Yeah.
Right? So now they have Stella, they have Shock Top, and then we have all these American craft breweries that the majority of the brewing public doesn't really understand, but their shareholders are going, oh, you guys are acquiring more. The brand is worth more because we have more we have more consumers now than we did yesterday because these people still buying Wicked Weed beers or 10 Barrel, whoever that is, they're essentially buying Anheuser-Busch products.
Yeah.
And it's increasing their shelf space real estate. They can only put Bud Light so many places.
They can do that. Yeah.
Now they can put Wicked Weed, 10 Barrel, and expand the real estate.
You can go into Safeway,
right,
and you could potentially see everything owned by Anheuser-Busch.
But it looks like a big...
It looks like Kraft.
Right. It looks like Kraft.
You got it all covered.
You got a lot of choices here.
Yeah.
But Safeway doesn't have the choice.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, look at the local beer section.
Pernicious at the airport. It's going to happen.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Goose Island, Pernicious, right, they're buddies.
You know what? I like that idea.
Yeah. Goose Island IPA.
You would.
Well, there's a lot of backlash.
Said it first.
As you can imagine, of course, there's a lot of backlash. Did you hear? You know, by the way, we've been invited in the past to the Wicked Weed Invitational, the Funk Fest that they do.
Yeah, Funk. This is huge.
The Funkatorium.
Yeah. Invitation. They weren't going to pay for us.
That's the one that goes.
Fuck them.
Now they
can probably fly us out there.
I love them.
Yeah, really. So, call them up.
Well,
there's plenty of hotel rooms now.
They announced the festival, I think the day after they announced their buyout, this year's festival, and a bunch of breweries backed out.
Yes.
54.
Yeah.
Is that what you read? I counted the list,
54.
Yeah. Of 70 something.
They said there was the invitation says 70 plus breweries, so 54 has pulled out.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge.
I have a list of some of them. Springfest has pulled out.
Yeah, our festival, yeah. Here's a list of some of them that have backed out of the Funkatorium Invitational. The Rare Barrel has backed out. Three Taverns, Creature Comforts, Captain Lawrence, I don't know, Birds Fly South, Almanac, The Commons, Jester King, Cascade, Beechwood. I read that Julian at Beechwood...
Really?
What he did, because it's a charity event, so he backed out... And then publicly stated, I will write a check, or I did write a check for the amount of my donation, my beer donation, to the charity. Because I don't want the charity suffering for the poor decisions, his words, of this company.
He's not alone in that. I've heard of other breweries doing that also.
Yeah, I'm reading right now, there's one called Ha River Farmhouse Ales who linked to that charity and on their Facebook page. And, it's been liked by 400 people almost, and they're saying that details are still being finalized, but our plan is to offer the special kegs we had planned on bringing to the event and maybe a few more at our tasting room the same day as the event in July, and then donate the sales of those special kegs to Eblen.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is the only thing that you can do, because really... You know, you're hurting the charity, which I think last year made like $10,000 off of this event.
Oh, okay.
So they're scrambling too. They're caught in the middle. So if you're a brewery that's pulling out, consider doing what these people are doing and making a donation.
Yeah. There's also a counter festival for the same charity being planned, opposite of Wicked Weed's Invitational.
No.
Yeah, I got this from the Beer Street Journal. they said, let's see.
Over your morning coffee?
A source that wishes to remain anonymous has contacted Beer Street Journal about a new counter festival to the Wicked Weed Invitational that hopes to debut this summer, benefiting the same charity that the Wicked Weed Fest was doing. The new counter festival has already confirmed 8 breweries in attendance, and they're told that once they cross the 10 to 12 attendee mark, the counter sour and wild festival will be officially announced.
Wow.
So they're even doing that. There seems to be even more backlash about this one than anything else we've seen.
Yeah. I don't understand why it's so intense with Wicked Weed compared to anybody else.
I think it's released a saturation point. We're at a saturation point now where not only are the consumers complaining about it and idiots like us, but breweries are complaining about it. I think this is one of the first times that we've seen so many breweries bitching about this buyout because they feel hurt.
Yeah,
but I get the limit thing, but there's something about the Wicked Weed culture was really special. Yeah. They were like kind of pure, like the epitome of like a bunch of good guys starting a good thing.
And they were cool.
Yeah.
And people wanted to like the cool brewery, and it is way not cool.
When 10 Barrel went under, I go like, I have nothing
right.
to do with 10 Barrel. No one drank 10 Barrel beer.
So, even, Goose Island maybe to some extent.
Yeah,
but Wicked Weed. Like.
Goose Island.
I got a T-shirt.
Right,
I had to pay for it full price.
Oh. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with that?
Wow,
I'm not going to wear it anymore. Inside out, I guess.
Certainly can't wear it to the Rare Barrel.
Wow,
that's for sure.
Did you pay full price?
It's like wearing a Budweiser shirt.
Yeah, it is.
I paid full price.
No way.
Wow. Yeah, I begged for it.
I couldn't get employee pricing.
That's how you get the call from maybe. You make Tasty pay full price.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Jesus. Okay. We're going to move on. We're not moving on, but we're going to continue on with this quote from Felipe Spicacla.
Oh, yeah. Felipe. My guy.
Say it again.
My dude.
We believe that wicked weed We believe that wicked weed is reinventing what craft beer can mean for consumers.
Well, they were making great shit, for sure.
Yeah.
But do you think that they're reinventing what craft beer can mean for consumers?
That's overstating.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. It's really taking craft beer to the next level. We should maintain the magic.
Well, I hope they do maintain the magic.
Sure. Yeah.
I think the problem now, you know, I used to say, as long as the beer's still great, I don't care.
But can we just watch the magic?
Well, just the you can see the marketing is taking over everything.
Exactly.
All that stuff they're saying is just marketing bullshit, right?
I'm also concerned about this back end deal, the price wars that are going to go on, and the buying up of the raw ingredients, and so now it's not just that I would be stoked if the beer is still good. Well, now I'm really worried about what is going to happen to small craft brewers in this process.
Exactly. Like, say a guy's thinking about getting into being a small craft brewer.
No.
Now, you know, all the, you know, it's going to be even harder.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I kind of was curious about, because I read an article that said that from Walt that there was no employee turnover at the upper levels. But one article I read mentioned that there was one of the main guys in the Funkatorium left to actually go open BrewDog's new sour production facility.
I think that was a couple months ago.
Oh, that was a while ago?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Not in relation to
this. Yeah, that was fake news.
It was reposted, and then it became fake news that way.
Oh, I see.
Okay. We don't need fake news.
No.
We don't.
No. You know who doesn't like fake news? Our president. He does not like fake news.
He should get bought out.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
One of the Dickinsons, I'm not sure who, made this statement. I think everyone out there needs to understand that we're still an Asheville brewery.
Okay.
Apparently he doesn't understand that now he's part of a Belgian brewery located in Asheville.
Yeah. It's like Goose Island is not being brewed in Fairfield over here.
Yeah. Right.
Right. We get that fresh Goose Island IPA in the Bay Area.
Why is it in the airports everywhere?
Yeah. Wow.
Backlash around the craft scene seems to be more intense following the sale that turned a fast-growing American company into a Belgian-owned money press.
Mm.
I don't know. Jester King and Brewing Network darlings, the Rare Barrel, both had recently done collaborations with Wicked Weed and both took to social media not only announcing their withdrawal from said collabs, but denouncing the move as both disappointing and overall bad for craft beer. The dollars that Wicked Weed are going to make for Anheuser-Busch will go towards more deceptive marketing practices, more buyouts, and overall more opportunities to diminish what the craft movement means to those of us who have nurtured it for so long. In addition to seeing a severe... In addition to seeing a severe reaction from consumers and breweries alike, craft beer bars are getting into the mix, with many across North Carolina rejecting the idea and refusing to serve Wicked Weed beers. Brawley's Beverage in Charlotte was among the stores and restaurants that said they would stop selling Wicked Weed.
Really?
Quote, if we continue to buy those brands, then we've tacitly approve of Budweiser's attempt to buy out their competition and use that competition by dropping the prices to hammer my friends' breweries, owner Michael Brawley said. We don't have a choice.
Interesting.
That's a fucking stand.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's great. And that's really the problem, what I was saying up there about it's just more, you're spending money on an Anheuser-Busch product, which is really the point. Because I used to be the same way. As long as the beer's fine, I don't give a fuck who owns it.
Yeah.
But you read more about the processes and the practices that Anheuser-Busch does to diminish craft beer.
Yeah.
And you realize your money is going to promote that.
Yeah, it's like when I buy heroin, that money goes to terrorism.
It does.
And that's not appropriate.
It's really not.
So I have curbed it at best.
Good. Where are your poppies grown?
Yeah. Methadone
I ask my dealer all the time.
Yeah. Hey, do you know where are these organic poppies?
And they're like, I take it.
Oh, yeah.
No, when I buy like a six-pack of Drake's beer, I can kind of have a good sense where the money goes.
Yeah.
When I buy a six pack of
Wicked Weed.
Goose Island, I don't know. It probably goes to Belgium or Brazil or something.
Part of it does. Part of it does.
Probably paying for some refugees to live somewhere. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe. Probably not, though.
Yeah, you're probably right.
There's no jet that needs to be purchased.
They're not paying for that. They're staying there.
Well, the heroin money, though.
And so when the thing was first announced, there were a lot of people on a lot of Facebook soapboxes, you know, saying, oh, well, maybe they couldn't have, maybe they had no choice. Maybe they were so in debt. Maybe they needed the money. Maybe they did the thing. And then these people come out by, oh, we were approached by like 10 other people. But we chose to go with Anheuser-Busch. Like, we didn't need the... But it's like, did you need to even do it? Did you need to sell out? Did you need to sell your brewery? You had four spots. You were doing fine.
Right.
You were, you know, your name was getting out there more and more. You're selling more and more beer. Why?
But I wonder if it's the partners.
It is true.
And not the Dickinsons.
Maybe. Right. You might be totally right.
Because if the Dickinsons were minority partners, it wouldn't have mattered what their thoughts were.
Yep. So... Yeah. You have partners here, right?
Yeah. What? Ask a question. Don't just smile at me.
You think they'd sell out before you?
They can't. They do not own a majority share.
Well, okay.
Even together, our contract is written in such a way that my vote is needed.
It trumps?
It doesn't trump. I can't vote them out, and they cannot collectively vote me out in any way. All major decisions require a unanimous vote.
Such as a buyout.
I wrote that in, you know, because my partners are all a family, and so individually they
they're
might
vote the same.
Well, they might one day, and their collective shares. If it were a contract that I didn't look out for that a possibility, then yes, that could have happened to me, but I didn't do that.
So you might have to go along for the good ride.
No, I can say no. Right. Is what I'm saying.
That's what he's saying.
But okay.
Yeah, I can say no. It's absolutely written into my contract. However, you all know that I'm up for selling out, so that's it's not going to matter.
Well, back to that. Say, for instance, like it does seem like Wicked Weed, one side of the deal, put themselves out for sale. Look like they were looking for offers. Right?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It sounds like AB InBev came up with, like, by far, ridiculously by far, the best offer.
Yeah,
maybe.
You'd take the same deal, right?
Well,
by the highest bidder, right?
I guess I
would.
But
you go like, I'm going to be moral and take
instead
of $20 million, I'm going to take like only $10 million.
You know? No, they said that it wasn't even necessarily the highest offer. It's that they could do more for their brand.
Okay.
Which is the biggest jerk off I've ever heard in my entire life. Yeah. Like, more for your brand. You and this is what pisses me off the most, is you made your money in an industry that supports independent and local breweries, and you have done the same thing, and then now suddenly you've sold your hard work to the antithesis of everything that you have made your money on.
Yeah.
That's the biggest fuck you that anybody could ever do, is you're literally saying fuck you to every single person that supported us. We're going to go do our own thing. Oh, but we're so entwined with the community, and that disapproving of us would just really hurt local businesses. So why don't you just go ahead and keep supporting us, and then jerk me off in the process?
So you don't want me to take the money when Anheuser-Busch comes?
No, absolutely
around.
Do.
Oh, okay. Right.
Absolutely.
He just doesn't want any of it.
No, we it's can not true.
Because
no,
I'm we not, can not true. I'm not about to give up.
Yeah, but we can keep it.
I mean, I know it was a joke, but in seriousness, I think that we're different. We're just reporting on it.
That's all.
We're reporting on it. We're talking about homebrewing and you know, craft beer in general. But I think if we...
But our fans rely on us to be true to craft beer in a way.
I don't know that they do.
That wouldn't we be shitting on them, giving the middle finger the same way?
I don't think so.
I think you're justified.
Because we don't have a product.
No, keep in mind.
We don't have a product.
People that we sell.
We
like
are
beer.
The product.
Yes.
I don't think we do.
Our opinions are the product.
Okay.
But people don't pay for them, for the most part.
That advertisers pay for them. And our listeners donate for them. They buy merchandise for them. I'm not seeing the difference here. I think it's the same.
And why can't
we go LLC? I need that. So when you go big, it's an LLC.
Okay.
Good news.
Go ahead, Warren. Why can't someone get in? Why can't someone start a brewery?
Because I can't everybody take something from you.
I see. Yeah.
Why can't someone start a brewery to make money?
And
build a business to then sell it.
And they can. But they clearly didn't have to sell it to Budweiser.
But why
they
does that matter?
But you can't see a lot of the people.
5 minutes of the conversation.
Can't you see a lot of the people doing just that, like St. Archer did?
Yes.
You start a company just to sell it?
Yes.
I mean, like a lot of VC people are looking at it like,
if they did it, then that's, I feel like that's okay. I'm not going to talk for you, but I'm going to talk for you.
Okay.
I think that's what JP's saying.
I'll move my
that's
mouth.
Okay to do.
Yeah.
Like a St. Archer or a Golden Road. I think they did the same thing. They built it to be sold.
Sure.
Some people say
I really think that
what
we're saying is if you don't go that route and you're genuine about the craft and why you're here and small, and then hand over your company to, let's just call it what it is, the enemy, to hurt your collaborators, your fellow business people, that's the moral question here.
Yeah.
So it's not about, is it okay to build a business and make money? Sure it is. Is it okay to do so at the risk of the rest of your industry? And this is where I think Bruce have to ask himself that question.
You've also brought it up where you've got, you're basing your company face on the craft brewing industry, how we're kind of everybody's friend.
Yeah.
The culture.
Yeah.
You're part of the culture.
You're successful because of the culture.
Right.
And then you sell out, and you're not the culture.
And worse than that, you're selling to somebody who is looking to destroy the culture. So it's
exactly.
Even worse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what if we didn't even know Luke and Walt, right?
Yeah,
I've never met him.
And just these family that did the whole thing.
Yeah.
It'd be different, wouldn't it?
I guess it would be a little different.
Right. Yeah.
Unless the family took the same steps that they did, where you felt like they were really
they were
part
like,
of the
like
community,
in front of
too.
A good
you know,
thing.
Sure, but...
And so that's what I was trying to get at. Is it hurt because everyone felt like they were friends with the Dickinsons? And that's, it's like everyone feels betrayal because
of that. I'm sure.
I think that's a piece of it. But no, I think it's more of what I'm saying that it's that they made themselves available to the beer community, to this part of the industry that is being destroyed by the likes of Anheuser-Busch. It's that part.
Just who they sold to.
Beardy's a dick.
I don't care that they made money. I care that they sold to a company that's the literal antithesis of what they have made their money on the last 4 years. It's like if Arthur Weasley decided to join the Death Eaters in book 5, right? It was just, it's the same kind of thing, right, Ben?
What are you talking about?
Right? It'd be devastating.
What are you talking about?
Why would he do that?
He wouldn't, because he has morals, unlike Wicked Weed.
No, because his wife would beat him to death with the magic.
Okay, guys, we can't go Harry Potter right now.
Please
stop.
Don't. All right.
You want some good news?
Hang on. Okay. In the middle of this insightful commentary, speaking of insightful commentary, Blobber Glop is on the line.
Oh.
With an actual legitimate question.
Hello, Blobber.
Yeah.
This is Canada's fault.
We didn't ask a question.
Make it relevant.
Okay, here's my question. Now, we're talking about a whale who's swallowing fish, right?
Yeah.
Now, is it too little, too late for the whales? Think about it. Just how many small breweries have spurted in America, around the world, actually? Just think of the growth that and they're targeting a niche market that knows exactly what they're doing.
So I can answer this. The answer is no. It is not too little, too late, and I'm going to tell you why. These people are so much smarter and more calculated than anyone is giving them credit for.
Yeah.
Their job is to be a multinational conglomerate, and it has been for what, over 100 years?
Yeah, it's business.
There's
billions of dollars at stake,
and they do things on a level and with a power that we cannot even fathom as small business owners. And so the way that they're going to be able to dictate the price of beer, the price of goods, the things on the shelf, I'm telling you, no, it is absolutely not too little, too late. And I think that the more we buy into that, the less we are opening our eyes to how smart they really are.
Yeah, they just want to blur the lines between craft and beer.
Premium or whatever.
Right, which is something that I wanted to do for a long time. We've been talking about on the show for a long time. Like, I just want to use the word beer because it doesn't matter. But the more you learn about it, the more it matters.
But they're going to blur the line, but it's going to work because... We're, you know, people sitting in this room and the people listening to us are in the 5 or 10% that like get it, right?
Yeah, you
can see there's
a
problem.
But
the average public guy
don't know about it.
He doesn't know. He's drinking Golden Road and Sculpin and all
that underground.
Right. You're not only right, you're right about that, but also even us 5 or 10%. We don't get the big picture yet. I'm telling you, we still don't understand what's going on here.
Sure.
There are things going on at the level that they're doing it that we don't see yet. And it will come to light, and then we're going to be. It'll be one of those things where you're like, Oh, shit.
Oh, that's smart.
I wish I had thought of that.
Because if they can take $20 million and buy a craft brewery, which is nothing to Budweiser, and they could potentially hold off a drop in their brand perception, which will cost them billions, they're going to do it.
Yes.
Well, and what I don't understand is why do we get upset about this when the Dickinsons and all of their owners get to make money from Anheuser-Busch? Anheuser-Busch is a big enough company. They could go make a new craft brewing brand.
Oh, sure.
And do the same thing.
No, they've already proven that they can't.
Other people getting paid.
Because they can't. They've tried that. That's actually the one thing they've proven that they can't do, is to go create their own craft
brand. Remember American Ale or whatever?
Make it happen.
Like 6-8 years ago, that terrible watered-down amber ale?
I totally remember that, and they were trying to, like, pump the bubble glasses. They were like serving these. Remember that?
Yeah,
that was the whole marketing thing.
Yeah. So that one, I wholeheartedly disagree. They cannot do that.
But how can they brew 10 barrel IPA in Fairfield then?
Because we don't know that it's happening.
Yeah, we don't know.
I mean, we know, but the world at large doesn't know. Oh, 10 barrel. I heard of them. Those are those fucking skater kids that built a cool brewery in San Diego.
They've tried it before.
Like, so they pay a bunch of skater punk kids to open a brewery.
Yes.
And do it.
Because I think that level of marketing would get found out easier. That's harder to hide first,
and then we'll just come in and buy it.
It's too obvious.
They've tried it before.
You need an existing brand to do that.
I was it Siebel?
Teeth.
Siebel, maybe. And they tested that AB put out Pacific Ridge.
Yes.
And Pacific Ridge was a direct competitor to Sierra Nevada.
Okay. Perfect.
Goddamn, tasted the same. The labeling was the same. But Anheuser-Busch had more of a push to be able to put it on the shelf at Safeway.
Yeah.
And they what, a buck less, a six-pack, or whatever it was, just to see if they could do it. And they did.
And it bombed, though.
No, well, that did, because it didn't have the Sierra Nevada name.
Yeah.
But they sold enough to know how to do it.
I see.
This was probably 96.
Okay.
Or 97 when this stuff happened.
Yeah, I remember that,
They were just pushing it.
Yeah.
Because it disappeared only because it was an experiment. It didn't disappear because it didn't sell.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah. They have enough money. They could crush the craft industry.
I don't know. I don't know that that's true. Without being subversive.
I think it's just easier to buy your. You're buying your competition because if you don't buy your competition and you put out a craft beer, you still have the top 10 in craft beer coming for you and coming for your shelf space. But if you own them, there's ten less people that are coming after your shelf space.
Way, but if you can be, you get the clout for the shelf space.
Mm-hmm.
You get the clout for the shelf space, and you can like just put it just under the six-pack level where someone's going to go, I could pay this or this.
Yeah.
Let's try this.
But that's just one element.
Well, that's why I believe they could crush it on – they could crush the craft industry on their own.
Why are we
complaining about them paying out the people that have worked hard and built successful craft breweries?
I disagree with the premise of the question.
Sure.
I can't answer it because I don't think they can crush the craft beer industry.
Okay.
Or they would have.
That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll go back to what I said before. They can't do it without being subversive. Because if it was just outright, if we really understood what they were doing, there would be more backlash. We would understand it, and they wouldn't be able to do it. But because they're smarter than that, and there are tactics that we just don't get, that's how it's going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
But there's always going to be Wonder Bread and in the bakery.
You're right.
Always going to be there.
I'll give you that. I don't think that craft disappears, but it sure does struggle.
It's not going to get the biggest growth like it has been. It's not going to have new stuff coming out there.
Yeah.
How many new breweries in the past decade?
Yeah, I don't know, but we're over 4,000 now. I think we're reaching 5,000.
And on one side we're saying we're threatened, and on the other side we're saying it's unsustainable.
Right,
and that's true, and those things are not separate. They're not mutually exclusive.
No, that's true.
The growth is threatened. Let's just raw materials alone. And by the way, that's just one aspect.
Yep.
Shelf space, tap handles, you name it. So,
yep.
The growth, by the way, was probably not sustainable on its own, even without the macro brew. So let's point that out. But now it's harder.
Right.
That's but the saying. Number of craft breweries that can sustain themselves.
Yeah.
But that growth.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not sustainable.
Well, I think we're coming to a point where we're going to have to admit that to a section of breweries that still exist that are independent, if you will, craft beer, that moniker is just marketing for them.
Yeah.
They don't care about it, but they're making their money, cheering on the craft beer movement. Yes. And the same goes for some consumers. They might think, it's local. I want to support local. I'm into the craft beer thing. They probably don't care as much as they will tell you that they care. And I think we're starting to see that shaking out here in the past couple of years and the next couple of years, where people are going to realize that nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
the people who are really passionate about it. Like the food, the farm to table bullshit. That came and went. I mean, it's still here around, but it's not as like, look at the farmer's market out here in Todos Santos. Mm-hmm. It's now a lot of larger company things where it used to be very small farms and very this and that and kind of makers, but now it's mostly food booths.
Okay.
It's not really farmers anymore.
Yeah.
It's just people following the money. That's where the money is, so that's where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Okay.
I bet you the crowd a year from now at the Wicked Weed Pub in Asheville is not going to look a lot different than what it did a month ago.
I agree with that, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
And also, I agree with JP about that craft beer is just marketing to them. I would just add, you don't actually know what they're marketing. Buying craft beer brands, you're going to find out, is actually a way to market Budweiser. Mm-hmm. Actual Budweiser and Bud Light. Mm. And you're going to see that shake out the way they do that. And it has to do with price fixing, and it has to do with shelf space. And that in other words, it's easy to go, they're just marketing Wicked Weed. They're cool. Marketing Wicked Weed is marketing Budweiser.
Yeah.
And so you're just going to see that shake out in a weird way that you didn't even see coming, when Budweiser becomes the biggest brand in the world again.
I will agree with that. The reason why is because up here we never saw, the guys who make Matilda?
Goose Island.
Goose Island. Yeah, we never saw Goose Island until they were bought out. Now it's here. It's just rotting on the shelves up north.
Yeah.
Rotting on the shelves at room temperature while everything else that belongs to that same company is in the fridge and being sold. And it's there. It's available, but no one wants it because no one associates it to actually being something you want.
Yeah.
So they own it, but they don't sell it.
They
just let it die.
Yep. It's cheap.
They moved into a market they weren't in before without any sort of way to...
It's also cheap to let it die. Fuck it. They don't care. Drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as what's in the shopping cart belongs to them.
Yeah. Correct.
Yep.
Thank you, Blobber. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yes. See you soon.
All right, brother.
I mean, and you're right with the shelf space thing. Like, there was a thing for California distributors that they were doing where if you had 90% of your portfolio Anheuser-Busch brands, right? They would and you spent $1 million or more on marketing those 90% brands that are owned by AB. They would reimburse you like 75% of your marketing.
Yes, I read that.
And now the State Department's looking into that.
Yeah.
But it's those kinds of practices that you don't even know about that are happening on the distribution level.
Yes,
that are going to choke the life out of your choices, and you won't have it. You'll have to go to the breweries that you want to support. You can't rely on Safeway to do it, or whatever.
And frankly, those are the even more transparent.
Right. Ones. And the only reason that people know about it is because the government's looking into it as a violation.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason.
Because Kraft points it out.
And that's why the AB lobbyists want to keep the current three-tier system the way it is, because they found the loopholes of the current system.
Oh, yeah.
And so, they don't want to change.
No.
And so that's why they spend more than tobacco and alcohol combined.
Yeah.
Lobbying to keep it the same.
Yeah.
So why don't more craft breweries partner up and buy, and own each other? Like,
that's a good question. And I think
there are some groups that would
ask that same question of other breweries. The Oscar Blues
have a new
Cigar
career.
City deal.
Yeah. Questions?
Those guys.
Careers.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yeah. Beechwood should partner up with Eagle Rock or whatever, and then they can go in on ingredients. Just fuck it. Why not? Right?
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. I did read a thing. Just another marketing thing that the high end is doing. AB is doing is, I don't know if you saw on the Beechwood website that there was a new craft beer blog that contacted Beechwood to do an article on them, and they're like, "Yeah, okay, we'll do the article." And the article came out when the blog dropped. Turns out the blog was owned by the high end, which is, we now know, Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
And what they were doing is they were using Beechwood beer name along with Shock Top, along with these other brands that they own, to again position their brands
in line with
the top. One of the top craft beer makers in the country.
These are the things I'm talking
about. That's exactly what it is. So when you're buying beers that are in the high-end portfolio, this is where your money is going to. It's going to these kind of deceptive practices that are just, they're there just to at least slow the growth of craft beer. So you'll think, oh, well, hey, they're mentioning Wicked Weed as alongside Shock Top. That's got to be the same. I'll just drink up Shock Top. It's fine. Oh, the same guys brew this. It's great.
Yep.
You don't know, because most people are dumb.
Yes. And it increases their own brand equity.
That's right. You want to hear good news real fast?
Yes.
All right.
I can leave?
You can leave, yes.
It's over.
Yeah. Several weeks back, we mentioned local craft beer bastion Speakeasy had been shuttered and later reopened while the brand could seek new ownership. This is due to some debt issues that weren't repaid. Well, we're pleased to report that a deal has been completed and Speakeasy will live to brew another day.
Wow.
Someone called Seth Butner, which I wish I made that name up. The former owner of Horizon Beverage, a distributor in Oakland, believed in the brand so much that he formed Hunter's Point Brewery and paid a reported $2.5 million for the brand and the brewery.
Wow.
Quote, "I worked with Speakeasy Ales and Lagers for 5 to 6 years as a distributor," said Butner in a statement. "We were one of the first companies to expand their distribution beyond San Francisco. I thought it would be a shame if the brand and one of the few production breweries left in San Francisco disappeared because of financial problems. Keeping Speakeasy's San Francisco-born and brewed tradition alive is very important to me. The beer quality will remain the same, and we will have every confidence that the current distribution network and territories will stay intact. Right now, we just need to revive the Speakeasy brand, and I'm prepared to do just that."
Okay.
So this guy is very passionate about Speakeasy, and that's great. So they are continuing on, and
good for them.
Well, there you
great.
Go.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good deal for all that equipment.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, that's a good price.
Well, I think Forrest's debts were like 7.5.
Yeah.
And so
liquidate.
Yeah, yeah. Just that's all I can do.
Fire sale.
Yeah.
It's like the bank took in the old butthole this time.
Bam.
All right, is that the news?
That's the news.
Great. If you want to jump into this great world of craft beer, you should try using Beersmith Brewing Software. You can go to beersmith.com right now and check it out. You can do all your recipes on there, all the things you didn't even know you needed it to do. It can do on both a Mac and a PC, plus you get a free trial. So go check it out at beersmith.com. It's the Beersmith Brewing Software.
Yes.
How about our Twitter game results?
I would love to talk about our Twitter game results. The Twitter game
was
AB InBev has approached the homebrewers network,
yes,
if you will,
yes,
to purchase Doc. Doc's going to get a spinoff on the AB podcast.
Free agent.
Okay,
yes.
What was the question? Like, what would the name of it be?
What would the name of it be?
Okay,
all right.
What's Doc's new podcast?
It's the next thing.
Yeah. That's the name.
Winner.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
They're going to be approaching me anytime soon.
Anytime soon. Sean Carney says, the homebrew doc presented by Northern Brewer featuring topics on how to hide your slurring and technical homebrew talk.
The homebrew doc. All right.
Jeff Angel, whatever. Misery Loves Company. What it's called. It's a non-judgmental podcast where brewers can discuss business problems as well as personal failures.
These are 140 characters?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm still smiling.
Colorado JBS writes in, says, "Call it whatever you want. It's just incoherent babbling with one nugget of gold surrounded by on-air naps."
No.
Yeah.
And last,
that's what Tasty is, a co-host, right?
On air,
yes,
nap.
Of course. He's running the board.
Yeah. We can nap together.
Yeah. And last but not least, Tristan McCoy says, no one can understand what he says, so buy Scott instead, and it'll just be a full hour of soundboard sounds, lame jokes, and interrupting guests.
Oh, always a way to insult Moscow.
And then he wrote in later, he goes, I meant Moscow, not Doc. And I'm like,
Yeah, we knew.
Yeah, way too confusing.
All right. Read me the nugget of gold one again. Doesn't matter.
That was from Colorado JBS. Says, call it whatever you want. It's just incoherent babbling with one nugget of gold surrounded by on-air naps.
That's my favorite.
All right, there you go. All right.
Congratulations on your win.
Colorado jibs.
All right. Adam and Eve is determined to help you spice things up in the bedroom, and they are backing up that promise. Check this out. Go to adamandeve.com, and you get 50% off almost any item when you use coupon code BNARMY at checkout. And that's a good deal in and of itself. But backed by popular demand and for a limited time only, you're going to get the free Big O kit. Who doesn't love the Big O, anyway? Adam and Eve's Big O kit includes their exclusive Climax gel and mini vibrator. So now you've got a new way to get her off. This is their copy, not mine. You'll also get your entire order sent to you for free. So anyway, just go do it. You know what to do. Go to adamandeve.com, use coupon code BNARMY. You're going to get a bunch of free shit and like free shipping and DVDs. And
something special, right?
And the Big O kit. So BNARMY is your coupon code. And thank you for supporting Adam and Eve and us by buying your dildos. Okay. I think that's it on my end.
Can we break?
We're done.
Oh. We get a big break.
Yeah. It's a break till next week.
Sweet. at which time we have Dr. Charlie Bamforth on the program.
Oh, yeah. My man.
Yeah.
He talks fun. That
talking about soccer.
That should be a good time.
I'm looking forward to that.
I want to hear him say aluminium.
Radiator.
And laboratory.
And water.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yes.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you to our show sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. Thank you to Florian from Urban Chestnut Brewing Company in St. Louis. Check him out at urbanchestnut.com to learn where you can grab some great lagers. Merge your love of Disneyland with your lack of engaging podcasts. Go to earsuppodcast.com as JP, Terrence, Bevo, and Taryn talk about all things Disney. Get on Twitter for some good beer insight and homebrew info. Follow Nate Smith at Nathan Homebrew, Mike McDowell at Tasty McDee. Warren is stuck over at Another Beardy, and the great Beverly is crushing cyberspace again at Bevo1. JP thinks Twitter is dead, and you should follow him on Instagram at Major Jip. Today's show is produced by Bevo, and your host has been Justin Crossley. Be sure to find the Brewery Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning.